Good evening, everybody. Welcome to National Liberty Alliance's weekly conference call. Today is Monday, September 20th, I think. Goodness. No, it's not that late. Didn't write down a latest date. 19th. September 20th. What am I saying? September 19th, 2016. We broadcast live every Monday from 9 p.m. Eastern until midnight. If you're listening over another network and you would like to ask a question or make a comment, our call-in number is 605-562-3140, and our participant code is 385-698. If anyone would like to email a question, you can send questions to questions, that's plural, questions, at nationallibertyalliance.org. Also, please support our business partners. You can find their banners on the right-hand side of our website, of which the proceeds go to support National Liberty Alliance's effort to save America. Also, please support National Liberty Alliance by donating $5 a month or more. Click on our donation tab up on the top right. Okay, tonight's scripture reading is going to be, James chapter 2, verses 14 through 26. James chapter 2, verses 14 through 26. What do it profit, my brethren, though a man say he hath faith and have not works? Can faith save him? If a brother or sister be naked, destitute of daily food, and one of you say unto them, depart in peace, be ye warmed and filled, notwithstanding ye give them not those things which are needful to the body, what doeth profit? Even so faith, if it hath not works, is dead, being alone. Yea, a man may say, thou hast faith, and I have works. Show me thy faith without thy works, and I will show thee my faith by my works. Thou believest that there is one God? Thou doest well. The devils also believe and tremble. But wilt thou know, O vain man, that faith without works is dead? Was not Abraham our father justified by works, when he had offered Isaac his son upon the altar? Seest thou how faith wrought with his work, and by works has faith made perfect? Was faith made perfect? And the scripture was fulfilled, which saith, Abraham believed God, and it was imputed to him for righteousness, and he was called the friend of God. You see then how that by works a man is justified, and not by faith only. Likewise also, was not Rahab the harlot justified by works when she had received the messengers and had sent them out another way? For as the body without the spirit is dead, so faith without the works is dead also. Okay, that was James chapter 2, verses 14 through 26. Okay, we have put together, we read last week, an information concerning martial law. We wanted to send out to all governors, legislators, and judges. At this point in time, we still can't send it out. We did send out a message, sort of desperate, in the sense of we need to get this message out. We've only got 2 more weeks till the end of this month, if that. It's a little less than 2 weeks. And there is a lot of pointing at September 30th concerning the dollar being refused internationally. We had gotten word some way back. We sent an email about this today or yesterday, I don't remember when. But back on the 28th, we had gotten word from a few sources that the dollar had indeed was foreclosed on. It was foreclosed on. The debt was due on the 28th of May, 2016. That was the main point. And the actual foreclosure, I guess you would call it, might be then considered September 30th. That's the day after that point in time, we're hearing that the dollar is not going to be accepted internationally. That's a huge, huge problem for the United States. It's a huge problem for we the people. And it could be the very thing that sends our country into turmoil, the very thing that brings about martial law. And that's what we need to be concerned about. That's the purpose of getting out there with the committees of safety, to protect ourselves as we the people, making sure that sheriffs understand and that local government understands the process of law and understands the chain of command. And that is the sheriff responsible for that county to, as far as the Constitution and the peace is concerned. That's his job. If we wait until the emergency arrives and comes upon us, people are caught unawares and haven't thought it out. And the first order of business is to, well, what am I going to do? And they're going to respond to the orders. I mean, what else are they going to do? And if enough people do that, the iron fist closes. And believe me, if that iron fist closes, you will not, I will not, no one will be able to open that fist again. During the closing of that fist, there's always that chance of preventing it from closing. Before the closing of that fist, there's a lot of chances to prevent it from even starting to close. And that is the point, to put light upon darkness, to put good upon evil. You know, these people are our servants. Those our servants, particularly in Washington, you know, our legislatures, and also our governors, one for every state, and also our federal district judges, and we'll even include the state judges, but particularly on the federal level, okay, and the governors. These people are going to be hit with an emergency that they are not prepared to hear or think about. It's the last things on their minds. Maybe a few of them know, but not enough of them know. And they need time to think about what they're going to do. I remember not too long ago, I'm trying to think of the incident that caused this and what exactly took place. We do have these tapes, by the way, where Congress was threatened. The question is who threatened Congress? Congress went into a closed session, and they were threatened. Oh, this had to do with bailing out the banks, I think, if I recall. And I think that was it. And Congress went into a closed session, and they were threatened thoroughly. If you don't sign these papers and bail out these banks, there will be martial law in the streets tomorrow. Now, some months later, quite some time after, some of these senators and or congressmen made note of that and told the people. They were bound not to speak about it, but I guess as time went on, they did. I know I've heard a couple of them talk about it, that they were thoroughly threatened concerning this. If Congress is called into a closed session and they are told that there's going to be martial law tomorrow, that we have a national emergency coming down the line, that the banks and the international, the other nations of the world are not going to accept the dollar, we're going to go into hyperinflation. I would presume people won't be able to buy gold and silver. It is true that the elite control that, so maybe it has something to do with them, but how long can they hold that up, you know, by using dollars? They won't be able to buy gold and silver. Or gold and silver will shoot up to $10,000. Silver will shoot up to $10,000 an ounce. I don't know. I have no clue on what's going to happen when the dollar is no longer accepted abroad. But something's going to happen. There's going to be a repercussion. There is no doubt going to be hyperinflation. It's a no-brainer. There's nothing to think about that. That's not in question. It's not maybe or if. No, it is going to be the case. First of all, the dollar is going to crash. It's a matter of question of time. Right now, there is a date, and we don't know. We've seen a lot of dates over the years, so, you know, but this one looks pretty strong. And there are some real serious people like Ron Paul and Schiff who also speak about this date. This is the day. So what does it mean? What's going to happen? What's the Monday after that weekend going to look like? Is it going to cost $100 a loaf of bread? Or is it going to just be a slow burn as we just keep inflating, inflating, inflating? Do we have a month? Do we have 3 months? Do we have 6 months? I don't know. I don't think so. And the reason why I don't think so is because gold and silver. If the international, if all of the nations of the world decide that they're, and this is what the claim is, that they're not going to accept the dollar no more, it's not accepted on the international market. If that is the case, how can we, the people, with dollars, buy gold and silver? That's my question. I don't think there is a way we can. I don't think that that's possible. And if we can't do that, then that's the panic, and that's hyperinflation, and we're in big trouble. What have you done? What have we done to prepare for this? You know, we have not built enough committees of safety yet to protect ourselves. There's about 115 out there, and they're still young, you know. So I don't know how far they've a lot of these committees of safety have advanced, but we have 3,133 counties out there. We need at least 2,500-plus committees of safety to be able to reasonably say that we're protected, we're in good shape. And they have to have advanced at least to a certain point where they got the sheriff on board. At bare minimum, the sheriff is on board, sees the wisdom, understands the dangers, understands that there is something coming along. It doesn't take much to make a sheriff or anybody see, because they already know, that the monetary system is going to collapse. When it's going to happen, you know, you might have a hard time convincing them of that. That's fine. We don't need to convince anybody of anything. But as long as we can agree that the economy, the monetary system, big difference between, we've never had a monetary collapse. We've had an economic collapse. We've never had a monetary collapse. So if that happens, if they can see it, and I know they can, they would know that, okay, yeah, we do have to get ready for this emergency. We have to think about it a little bit. We have to understand what's at stake here. And in the papers we wrote up, is a no-brainer in the fact that martial law is not the way to go, that it is control at the end of a gun. Mao, that's who we have, control at the end of a barrel of a gun. We will never, ever, ever come out from underneath that except for a lot of blood shedding. And so this is where we're heading. We have not prepared for that yet. We do have just one more shot. One more shot to at least put her off. Look, these people are powerful. They do control the world, and they control these other nations. They could go and twist their arms and say, look, you're going to continue to accept the dollar for a while longer. We'll let you know when, but you're going to continue accepting it. What would make them say or do that? Panic, concern, the inability to go forward with martial law in America. That is what will prevent that from happening. And it's the only thing that I can think of that would prevent that from happening. I don't have a crystal ball. I can't read the future, but I can read the tea leaves. And there is problems coming down the pike. And too many of us are still like the proverbial ostrich with our head in the sand. We're not paying close enough attention. We're not doing what has to be done. You know, look at National Liberty Alliance, which is a facilitator of knowledge, organization, communications, and so on, ultimately the builder of the Unified United States Common Law Grand Jury. They're the ones that need the money. They're the ones that need envelopes, they need paper, they need a toner, they need stamps in order to get papers out. Because of that, in my mind, and anything that I can see, that is the only thing I could take, unless there's something else going on amongst the elite, you know, because I believe there's a division among them. There's got to be five or six or even more different potential groups of people which are made up of different families that control the world. They've come together and are controlling things as a monopoly. Maybe there's enough infighting going on there to prevent this thing from going now. But I can tell you that there are a lot of them that are pushing to go over the edge because it's getting too late for them. If they hold off too much longer, they're not going to be able to do it at all because, you know, they operate in darkness and they can't survive in the light. And that's what we here at National Liberty Alliance, that's what the Unified United States Common Law Grand Jury is doing by filing papers, is putting on the light to cleanse, to expose, to reveal, to stop evil. It is a definite game changer. If we light up what it is that they're doing, and we shine a light on that, and we reveal it, It is, history shows us, it is always a game changer. Always. And we need a game changer right now. That's what we need. We need, we read the paper last week. If you wasn't here last week, you should go up and read, listen in, and you're going to go up onto the line and read the paper. We have it up on our website. Just go to nationallibertyalliance.org and click on grand jury. So the top right-hand side on the blue bar, grand jury, click on that. And just scroll down a little bit, and you'll see information to our legislators, governors, and judges. Read it for yourself. Understand the power that we are coming in, by the authority that we are coming in. The fear of we the people into the minds and the hearts of these out-of-control, crazy people. But the key thing is this. What makes them fear? If they believe that Congress is not going to go along, if they believe that the governors are not going to go along with martial law, if they believe that even the judges aren't going to go along with martial law, or any part of those groups don't go along with martial law, then they know that they're going to expose themselves, and they're going to be in big trouble, and they know that. So we have to convince the governors. We have to convince Congress, as worthless as they are, as uninformed as they are, as much of a politician as they are, as corrupt as they are, nevertheless, I believe if you get them thinking about it right now, even if they don't know about it, they're thinking about it. You put the point out there, they've given it a little thought. Even if they say, ah, this is crazy, they've given it a little thought. And then next week, 2 weeks, so now all of a sudden, Marshall, wait a second. See, they've given it a little thought. And the people who really look, they've given a lot of thought. And you see, now you have the chance of them having, making a different decision, other than acting under pressure. Because if they're not thinking about it, and they're called into a special session, and these wackos come in that control our Congress, that control our administrative powers and authorities, who control our courts, and they come in, and they tell them, martial law needs to happen in America tomorrow. There is no choice about it. This is what's going to happen. And they lay it out to them, and they'll feel they have no choice but to vote for it, and it's going to happen. We need to get them thinking. We need to get them thinking now. I think in this paper lays out the fear of the people. Again, anybody who hasn't heard or read this paper, go out and read it or listen to the last week's program and understand the power of those words revealing the truth and letting them know we the people aren't having this. We made the point very clear. We are 6,000 plus or minus people across the nation in every state of the union. We've made that clear to them. We're not just a few people. We have 115 plus committees of safety in motion. That's power upon these people. We outnumber them just in numbers of ourselves, considering our numbers versus the elected people involved here. And we are the people. We're not just from one state or one county. We're from every state of the union. We're from throughout the entire United States. We represent a good selection of the people. We come under the authority of the Unified United States Common Law Grand Jury, empowered by the Unified State Common Law Grand Juries, empowered by the people within their states as they collected across their states and every counties to say yay to bringing back the common law grand juries, to bring them into the system. That's power. And they will see that power. It's in that paperwork. And they will fear the power of the people. And we have a chance to at least put it off. We need to put it off for at least 3 to 6 months. We have to put it off for 3 to 6 months. We have to put off this coming insanity, this martial law that's coming upon America. We have to push it off. And then what are we going to do if we push it off? Do we go back to sleep? Do we stick our heads back into the sand again? Or do we actually get up there and let's build these committees of safety? And 3 to 6 months from now, who cares what they do? Because we don't care. We will not care any bit what they do, because we will win. We will survive. We will overcome them. We the people. We are many, they are few. We just have to come together organized and in communications. We need to get this ham system going. We need to get these little radio systems going throughout the entire nation. We need to communicate. We need to get our sheriffs focusing in on the power and the authority and the local towns. They don't have to believe it's coming next week. And the last thing you want to, next week or next month or soon, that's the last thing you want to talk about is when it's going to happen, because nobody really knows. But what you want to talk about is the fact that it's going to happen. The economy, the monetary system of the United States is going to collapse. Everybody knows that. Maybe the morons don't know that, but generally even the morons, most people know that. They can see that. They understand that. We deal with money every day. Everybody knows there's a problem. And they also can understand when you bring that point, that problem, and say, just think about it. If your money is worthless, who's going to be delivering food? How are you going to get electricity? Who's going to be going to work the next morning? Don't you think people will be more interested in taking care of their families? And who's going to be there? Where's the fuel going to come from? Where's the food? Where's the milk? Where's the bread going to come from? Who's going to be breaking the bread? Who's going to be milking the cows? How is that going to truck across the nation and to wherever it's got to go? How's that going to happen? We can fix that problem because each county has enough of whatever it is that has within it sufficiently to be able to provide for themselves. And a well-organized county working with another county well-organized will barter back and forth. We got bread and you got milk. Just make the trade. It's the way it used to work anyway. It's how America started in the beginning. Go out west, that's the way it was. Bartering was the way of life. People worked day and night and never put a penny in their pocket. They were always broke, but they had the food because they bartered. They bartered whatever it was they had, they shared with other people. Sure, they got a little money here or there, but basically money was short. Okay, so we need to do something, and we need to do it now. If the dollar is worthless in 2 weeks, what good is it for people holding on to it right now? And we're not asking for all your money. We're asking for $5 or $10 a month. That's all we're asking for. Not asking for $1 million. You got $20,000 in the bank, we're not asking for $5,000. We're asking for $5 lousy dollars. That's what it's going to take to get this paper out. I will say that people are starting to respond since I put the email out. For those who have seen the email, some people have responded already, and we have collected maybe about $800, I think. I'm not sure, but somewhere up there. It's not enough, of course, but it's just the beginning of the response. Hopefully, everyone's going to respond with $5 a month or more. So this is what we need to do. We need to get this paper in. We need to buy more time. And when we get the time, we have to be thankful for that time and not waste that time and build these committees of safety everywhere. Because united we stand and divided we will fall. And time is short. There is no more time left. With that, I just want to go to one other thing. We did have a problem here over the weekend with PayPal. For me, it became a huge problem. It sucked up every moment of my weekend. I'm so disgusted with that bank. We canned them. They're gone. By God's mercy, we recently, over the past week, couple of weeks, we finally got a credit card through the bank. And we were unable to get a credit card to the bank because we were flagged as some crazy group or something. But apparently that has changed because the bank called and said, hey, we'll give you the cards, you know. And so we've got the credit card system set up at the banks, okay? And it's working. We're taking all donations that are coming in now are going through that. And all any purchases are going through that card. Today I pulled off the icon for PayPal. We're not dealing with PayPal no more. Those people who are donating through PayPal, if they decide to leave that account open, then we'll deal with PayPal with the accounts already in process, and we'll just go forward. I'm going to read this letter that I sent out just right before this program tonight, maybe an hour or so before the program. And it pretty much will explain what has been taking place over the weekend and how my time was tied up with writing emails to people. Some people getting very upset, not understanding what we're talking about, and so on and so forth. But let me just read this. And again, this letter has gone out. This letter has gone out only to a little over 800 people. the people who are who had an account in the past or who do have an account now, that is giving donations. Shall, let me say it that way, giving donations to National Liberty Alliance for the purpose of paying for the needs that we need to pay for. You know, just for our web space alone, we're up to $350+ a month just on that alone. You know, we have over $400 a month just on our fax machines. Okay, and that's only two of simple bills. Okay, we've got to figure, things cost money. You know, I've had people call me and say, hey, I could get your web space for $10 and you got unlimited. I've been there already. That doesn't exist. It's in people's, that's a fraud. I've been there. I've done it. And when I went over a certain amount, they shut me down. You're sharing that with 200 other people. You can't put all that stuff up there. But, you know, it's just a lie. So anyway, here's the letter I sent out. Now, just to give you a brief overview, what I have discovered is that we have 275 people supporting everything that National Liberty is doing. 275 people out of 6,000. Let me repeat that. We have 275 people donating to National Liberty Alliance, supporting all the work, paying all the bills, and we have almost 6,000 members. 275 people. Now, I do want to make a correction on that because we've lost over 600 people whose accounts were suspended by PayPal. And I'm going to read this letter. It's going to explain a little bit of what that's about. I just found out about this week. We should have over 800 people supporting National Liberty Alliance at this point in time. But because of the way PayPal works, and believe me, I really didn't want to use PayPal, but it was the only service I could set up and get going. And when we set up the banks, there was a lot of problems there. But anyway, it's all we had. And I knew there were certain quirks about it, and we were very careful not to fall into these pitfalls. But there were a lot more pitfalls that we didn't know about. They suspended 600 people who were paying into National Liberty Alliance to support us. And also over a period of 3 years, they suspended them. And then they sent them letters telling them that National Liberty Alliance suspended you. That's what they said. National Liberty Alliance suspended you. You can imagine me on the phone earlier today with these clowns. I was polite and, you know, controlled myself, but I gave them a piece of my mind. Anyway, let me read the letter. This went out to about 800 people, people who have in the past or is supporting National Liberty Alliance monetarily right now. This is an important message to those people who have or had an automatic monthly donation via credit debit card account set up with National Liberty Alliance through PayPal. There has been a lot of confusion over the weekend concerning PayPal accounts, and therefore we have been sending out emails to hundreds of people who are or were donating to National Liberty Alliance. I have had numerous conversations with PayPal trying to find out why, unknown to National Liberty Alliance, almost 600 accounts have been suspended over the past few years. We have discovered that one of the main reasons we have lost so much financial support was because of the difficulty of transferring funds into PayPal, and after a missed automatic payment, usually because of insufficient funds, PayPal cancels your subscription. They call it suspension, and you're supposed to be able to go in there and push a button to unsuspend it, and they wanted me to upgrade for another $30 a month to do that. Anyway, PayPal cancels your subscription and then sends the person who was donating an email claiming that National Liberty Alliance canceled suspended their account, and thus creating a confusion and a loss of support. I've had numerous people write me emails and said, I didn't give up paying support into National Liberty Alliance. You suspended me. You shut my account down. And I said, well, the hell with it. That's what PayPal had done to us. So we also discovered numerous discrepancies. Whereas 47 PayPal accounts were listed as suspended, when in fact they were not, and was in fact all still active. 47 accounts claimed to be suspended. We sent them letters presuming them to be suspended, and they wouldn't. This created more chaos over the weekend, whereas some people were told that their accounts were suspended when in fact they were not, causing us to spend endless hours communicating by email to each of the people that emailed us their concerns. We apologize for all the confusion and distress we may have caused anyone concerning this matter, and would like to inform you that we have solved the problem by using a credit card service directly through National Liberty Alliance's bank, which allows us to take any credit card, debit card, more accurate accounting, and give National Liberty Alliance control on how an account is handled. Please be advised that National Liberty Alliance is no longer using PayPal as a credit card service account, and advise you of the following. Number one, if you want to continue your PayPal as your choice of financial support to NLA, we will continue our connection to PayPal as long as you leave your account active, and we will monitor your account on a regular basis for suspension. Two, we will not be taking any new donations through PayPal whatsoever, and have removed their logo from our website. Three, we would prefer that you cancel your monthly donation through PayPal and start a new monthly donation through our new service, which accepts Visa, MasterCard, Discover, and American Express, and who also does not require people to participate exclusively with their service, as PayPal did. You can go to nationallibertyalliance.org/monthly-donations. Let me repeat that, nationallibertyalliance.org/monthly-donations, and choose a donation amount of $5 or more a month. Four, we have set up a special email account for anyone having trouble canceling PayPal. They can email their name and your PayPal email address to paypal@nationallibertyalliance.com. Let me emphasize .com. Anyway, someone's trying to call me here. Let me repeat that, okay? You can send your name and your email address that you use with PayPal to, we set up an account, an email address called PayPal, at nationallibertyalliance.com. Now, we own .net, .com, and .org. We always use .org, but often when I set up some pop mails for these kinds of purposes, I'll do it on .com or .net. But in any event, it's .com. So it's PayPal at nationallibertyalliance.com. And upon your request, we will cancel your PayPal account for you. Thank you for your time, and let me say again, we apologize for all the confusion and distress we may have caused anyone. And then I signed it. Okay. So PayPal has been a disaster for us. When you realize this 800 or so people, we would not be having any bill problems at that point in time, none whatsoever, and we'd have money to be able to do a lot of mailing and do a lot of things. So hopefully all those people who have supported us in the past will get out there and reactivate their donations, $5 a month or more. And also hopefully those who are on PayPal will move over to the new service, because I'd like to drop them like a dead dog. I mean, just get away from them. But we will keep it open for anybody who wants to maintain that account. But we will keep an eye. So if we have any problems, we don't want any confusion. That what they claim, that we suspended someone's account or we did something, we did nothing. So, and we'll repair that. Okay, so, and of course, anybody who has not been given in, we really need the money. We got to get these messages out. We've got to get the message out to our governors, to our got to put them on call. Go back and listen to last Monday's recording. Listen to the first beginning, a half hour or so, whatever it was, where we read the letter, the information that we were going to send out, we want to send out. But time is running out. We need to start the printing of these papers tomorrow. We need to start getting the envelopes and getting everything together and getting this job done. We need to do it now. There is no more time. You know, it's going to take time to put it together, and it's going to take time to put it into the mail, to go through the mail, to be received, and for them finally to get it. It's going to take, if we get everything out tomorrow, it's going to take them a week to get it in their hands to be reading it. You know, their mail system is full of bureaucracy, I'm sure. You know? So we don't have any more time left. We need to be moving on this thing. And remember, you know, what good is your money anyway if the whole thing collapses next month? What good is it? Let's put some of it to work, $5 or $10 at least. Let's put it to work. Let's do something. And again, you know, anybody that can give a one-time gift, also we have that ability up on our donation button on the top right-hand side. You can choose between the monthly and the one-time donation. Hopefully everybody goes on the monthly, $5 a month or more. But anybody who can afford $100 or $500 or $1,000, you know, do something up there to give us that pump to get this thing going, to get this mail out, you know. We rarely get anybody donating $1,000, but we have had it. We've had a couple of people who actually over the time given us $5,000. But that doesn't come all that often. Right now, nothing like that is happening. And we're really starving. And I hate begging for money. I really do. But I'll beg for money for my nation. I'll beg for money for my republic, for our Constitution, for my children and for your children, for myself and for you. I will beg for money. So I'm begging. All right, let me get off this because I'm getting tired of listening to myself on this myself. So. Okay. ICANN. This is that internet problem. We really want to get on top of that now. We're talking about filing two lawsuits, or maybe do it as one, I'm not sure. But we're looking to do two lawsuits. Looking to file them in New York. One of them is against all three branches of government. Hang on a second. I want to read this correctly. Let me get my Constitution out here. The First Amendment, the Bill of Rights, says, Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion, or forbidding the free exercise thereof, or abridging the freedom of speech, or of the press, or the right of the people peaceably to assemble, and to petition the government for redress of grievances. Robert Schultz with We the People went up against the three branches of government and took them into court, and took them up to the Supreme Court for redress of grievances. And the court told him, you can ask, but they don't have to listen. That was the bottom line with his court case. He was appalled by that. I was appalled by that. And Robert Schultz is a good guy, but he went up as the wrong individual. You know, he went up as really a slave. He asked. We don't ask. We're going to tell them. So I'd like a group of us got together here at the national end here and deciding of filing a case for all three branches for redress of grievances. And we have a lot of questions to ask. And we'll fire the judge. We're not going to let the judge to take control of this case. Not at all. Some people, you know, I continue to get people, even members of ours, that tell me that, hey, you're going about this the whole wrong way. You know, you have to go into the man on the land stuff. You have to get outside of their jurisdiction. And no, we're already outside of their jurisdiction. We're in the jurisdiction of the law of the land. That's where we're at. They're in the wrong place. They've taken over our building. We want it back. What they're doing is a fraud, and that's our position, and that's what we're going to hold up to. And we're going to put the fear of the people and the fear of God into them by bringing the truth out into court and laying it out. We now have over 8,000. I've been collecting email addresses, and I think I can say we have every single major newspaper in America, the email address to them. We have every single news outlet, TV news outlet in America. We have all of the national newspapers, all of the national TV. I'm not sure whether we have any radios in there. I think we do have some radios, but it's mostly newspaper and TV. We have them all. And before we were putting them out to about 3,500. Now we're putting it out to over 8,000. So whatever we file in the courts, whatever we do anywhere, we're going to start pumping the news. Someone's got to pick up something somewhere. More pressure. Again, when you put the light of the truth in every newspaper in America, every major newspaper and TV in America, whether they run it or not, it's exposure, and it's exposed them. When you file it in the federal district courts, all 94 federal districts, it exposes them. When you send it to every congressman and every senator and every single judge on the federal level, every single judge on the state level, and every single legislator of both houses in every single state of the union, that's 50 times 2 times whatever number of people they have in those houses. We send it to all of them. We send it to every governor. We send it to the Joint Chiefs of Staff. Everybody gets it. This paper we're talking about sending out, we read last week. Everybody gets it. You can't hide from that. It's difficult. They don't know what that is going to cause for them. They don't know. And the people certainly that now have the decision to go along with this subversion against we the people with this martial law is going to think twice, especially how we inform them that we are going to press to the ultimate penalty of the law of the land, that anyone who says yay or supports in any way this, martial law will be held accountable. The time will come when we get back things and get back up on top of things, and we're going to bring them to trial, and the people are going to decide what their fate is, and we're going to ask for the maximum penalty that the law allows. And it's up to the people. They'll listen to the case and consider the facts and consider, the circumstances, what happened. And I'm sure they'll consider mercy, because we'll tell them they need to consider mercy too. And then they'll make their decision. This is the fear of the people that we need to put in the hearts of these people that are controlling our nation and destroying it. So we have to do something with this. We got to go forward with this. We got to get this done. Okay, so anyway, going in with this lawsuit is just another pressure on top of them. They're gonna have to answer. And I think the way we're going to approach this case, you'll watch and you'll see how it happens. It's really bringing it into the common law. They're not going to be able to argue with it. They're just not going to be able to do it. The other thing is, and I find this very interesting, I'm going to read a couple of lines that I've pulled out of a few website news information. And here, there's just a paragraph here and a paragraph there. There's just two of them. Congressional Republicans have been increasingly frustrated with President Obama's decision to relinquish federal control over ICANN, the California-based nonprofit that manages the databases that underpin the Internet. Senator Republicans fear that the handoff will allow other counties or to dominate other countries to dominate and even censor the functioning of the Internet. Now, let me ask you two questions. Why are they so frustrated with President Obama? Whoever gave him the power and the authority to pass on the control of the Internet, the oversight of the Internet, to some foreign country? Where does he get that authority? How come they're not asking that question? That's question number one. Question number two, and I'm sure we could think of a lot more. Question number two is, where are the Democrats in all this? Are they making this a political thing? Is that what they're doing? Because that is what they're doing. They always do that. You know what I noticed? I noticed that when the Supreme Court makes a decision, they always have a group going this way and a group going that way. They got to play on both ends. They just can't do it right and end the matter once and for all. Once in a while, they do it unanimously, but that is so rare, It makes me sick. It's so rare. What is with these people? Why do they keep the division there? Why do they keep the debate? They want you to think that there's some debate going on. There's no debate about the truth, about the facts, about the law. There's no debate about. There's nothing to debate. It's done. It's been settled. It was settled by a little booklet called The Constitution for the United States of America. And its capstone, Bill of Rights. And its footing, the Declaration of Independence. It's settled. There is nothing to talk about. And we can show that clearly in any argument, any day of the week. We can make that. They can't say nothing. And that's why, and nobody goes into court talking the way we do. And that's why they are silent. And silence is acquiesce. We got to ask the right questions, and we got to do the right things. This is just a mind game they're playing with it. They're turning it, the Republicans are turning it into political. And when I say the Republicans, I'm not talking to people that are registered as Republicans, nor am I talking about people who are registered as Democrats. I'm talking the people who control the Republican Party. I'm talking about the people who control the Democratic Party, the lowlifes, evil people. Let me read another one. The proposal will significantly increase the power of foreign governments over the Internet, expand ICANN's historical core mission by creating a gateway to content regulations, and embolden its leadership to act without any real accountability. Senator Ted Cruz, Republican of Texas, wrote in a letter to the Commerce Department last month, "We have uncovered that ICANN's Beijing's in China, Beijing. I don't know how to pronounce that. Anyway, office.
Beijing.
Thank you very much, Mr. G. Beijing. Office is actually located within the same building as the Cyberspace Administration of China, which is the central agency within this Chinese government's censorship regime. You know what? When I read this, it made me think that ICANN has been taken over and they are pushing for the move to the international realms of control. That's what made me think when I read this. I don't know where the truth is. Nobody knows where the truth is anymore. You just can't tell what's really going on. But I do know what's right from wrong. I do know what they can do and they can't do. I know we can make an argument so strong that their mouths will be sewed together, their lips will be sewed together, they won't be able to even get saliva through it. Because they cannot argue against the light of day. They just can't do it. Darkness can never overtake light. It can't happen. So we could win this case. We have to file this case. And it doesn't cost us millions of dollars or thousands of dollars because we're not lawyers and we do everything for free. But it does cost money for paper. It costs us a couple of thousand over a time period, you know, to get the paper and the toner and file the papers and do this and do that, you know. That may take some time. I mean, it takes some money. But we're not talking $10,000 to do that. We're not even talking $5,000 to do that. We're talking maybe a couple of thousand dollars to do that. Why can't we, the people, why can't 6,000 people come up? Why can't it, you know, just think if everybody gave $1 a day, that's $6,000 a month. That's $6,000 a month. That's a pretty good income to be able to do what we do. We're on a shoestring budget. We've been on a shoestring budget since day one. We need to do something here, and we need to do it now, tonight, tomorrow morning. There is no more time. Either the money shows up in the bank in the next 12 hours, and I do mean 12 hours, not 24 hours, because we need to start printing tomorrow to get this out in time. Either the money shows up through donations in the next 12 hours, and we do what we, the people, have a duty and a requirement to do for ourselves and our posterity, for our neighbors, our friends, our nation, our republic, to do the right thing. We do it, or we just say, c'est la vie to the republic, goodbye, because that's what we're doing when we're not getting off our rear ends. And I want to talk to the people who haven't given a penny at all. You keep thinking that someone else is doing it. I'm telling you, I'm here to tell you right now, your thinking is wrong. Someone else is not doing it. You have to do it. You have to give $5 a month or more. You got to do it. Not the next guy, you. That's what has to be done. And I will beg, and I will holler, and I'll do anything I have to get this money. Of course, I'm not going to do nothing wrong. I'm not going to steal it. But I'm going to complain to you. I'm going to annoy you. I'm going to piss people off if I have to. I don't care. Because we have to save this nation. We have to stop screwing around. Give up a cup of coffee a week and what? You go out and buy a roll and a donut and a cup of coffee, and that's more than $5. Give up one day, one morning, give up your cup of coffee and donut and roll. Just give it up one day. That's all. One day a month. That's all you got to do it. One day a month. People go out and buy their kids, I don't even know what they call them these days, these games and stuff. They're all kinds of games. They'll spend $100 or $50 or whatever it is. But they won't give $5 to save their republic? We got to get our priorities straight. We really do. We got problems, people. We need to fix this thing and fix it now. You got 12 hours. 12 hours is going to tell us whether we are going to save this republic or not. 12 hours. I will send out a letter in 12 hours to let everybody know what the word is. That's 10 o'clock tomorrow morning. I'm going to send an email to tell you what's going on. We've done it or we didn't. It appears that you're giving up on the republic. Gerard, you got anything? You got to unmute your mic, though.
Well, we got a couple of questions that came in, for one thing. There's some interesting stuff going on just that we should keep our eye on. This gasoline pipeline shortage in the 6 southern states that are now everybody's lining up for gas. I don't know how much of it is true and how much it is like false flag, but all of a sudden they can't get gas to the people because there's a hole in a pipeline that's been leaking for weeks and they had to shut it down. And they're putting in an alternative pipeline. It all sounds like a bunch of gobbledygook to me. How do you lose 250,000 gallons a day and not know that you got a leak? It sounds to me like it's the beginning of getting people ready for shortages. You know, or they're already having trouble getting their money accepted and they're using this as an excuse. I don't know. You can't trust anything that the media tells you. But anywhere, there's 6 southern states that have declared a state of emergency because you can't get gas without waiting online, like back in the in the gas crisis. And anyway, those states are Alabama, Georgia, North Carolina, South Carolina, Tennessee, and Virginia. So keep your eye on that and see how far that goes and if they build on that. You know, they've declared states of emergency, relaxing limits on fuel transportation to try to stave off shortages and fuel price spikes. But anyway, I just heard about that tonight. The other thing talking about, you know, being free and acting free and becoming free, you know, a lot of what this government does is they do it because we let them do it, you know. And there was an article about Oklahoma and all matter of fact, it's on Snopes because somebody checked it out, and they passed a lot of legislation that is in defiance of the federal government and the ACLU. And Snopes is saying this is true, which is kind of surprising. And they talk about, you know, amendment to place the Ten Commandments on the front entrance of the state capitol. They did it. Guess what? We did it anyway. They passed recently passed a state law in the state to incarcerate all illegal immigrants and ship them back to where they came from unless they want to get a green card to become American citizen. they're all scattered. We hope we didn't send any of them to your state because they all left the state when that happened. This was against the advice of the federal government and the ACL. They said it would be a mistake. Guess what? We did it anyway. And yesterday we passed a law to include DNA samples from any and all illegals to the Oklahoma database for criminal investigative purposes. Pelosi said it was unconstitutional. Guess what? We did it anyway.
And, Pelosi, huh? That's a joke, huh? How much did they pay her to come out and say that? Come on.
She doesn't have to pay her. She does it automatically.
Oh, man. Pelosi, yes.
Several weeks ago.
I got to go throw up.
Yeah. We passed a law declaring Oklahoma a sovereign state, not under the federal government directives. And that, for your information, makes Oklahoma and Texas the only two states to do so. Guess what? More states are likely to follow. Louisiana, Alabama, Georgia, both Carolinas, Tennessee, Kentucky, Missouri, Arkansas, West Virginia, just to name a few. Should Mississippi act, so will Florida. Save your Confederate money. It appears the South is about to rise again. The federal government has made bold steps to take away our guns. Oklahoma, a week ago, passed a law confirming the people in this state have a right to bear arms, transport them in their vehicles, and I'm sure that was a setback for the Kennedys and Mrs. Pelosi. Anyway, what Snoop said is that wasn't a law as far as the sovereign state. It was a resolution, so that's, you know, it's like a, I don't know, what do you want to say? It's making a public statement, but a resolution is things that, like, towns can pass and that, and they're not necessarily laws, but they show the political lay of the land in that particular town or state. So it's pretty powerful, but it's not really a law. So that was a misquote there as far as Snoop's was concerned. But I just thought it was interesting.
Yeah, well, they mentioned Kennedys. There are no Kennedys left in politics.
Well, this is probably an older article. I was going to say that because they're saying yesterday, but I don't know. This here was an older article. You know, sometimes they rehash them. So some of this stuff was done back in 2009, you know.
Well, even back then, it's got to go back a lot further than that. I mean, when did the last Kennedy die that was in politics?
Well, Ted Kennedy's was around not too long ago. Senator Ted Kennedy?
Maybe that's right. When I think he had cancer and he was up there with Obama when he was running the first time.
Yeah.
That's probably 2008, 2009.
Yeah, so not that. Anyway, that's it. I just wanted to say that. Now, here's a state like Oklahoma that they put their mind to it, and they just do it. And that's basically what this is about. What the federal government does, we let them get away with. And so that's what National Liberty Alliance is about, is challenging them, challenging these things they do and making them answer. But also, we have a question here from Jim. He says, are there two definitions for martial law, one meaning applicable when you are a member of the military and another when the military takes control of the area? Could the Uniform Code of Justice also be defined as martial law?
Well, that's a good question, because I did hear Brent talking last week, I think it was, and mentioned something about it, and it sort of put me back, and I said, man, I never thought about it that way. So I guess martial law is military. It's military. Martial law means military law, I think. Maybe Brent can comment a little bit on that, what he understands about that. But I do know that martial law upon we the people is unconstitutional. It is evil. It is against everything that is holy, everything that is in common law. It just cannot, should not be. Even the United States Supreme Court has said that it just has no meaning anywhere as far as what the people are concerned. But they have applied it, they have used it, and it is always used to control the people after they have taken over a country, to keep things down, to keep things under control. And you're under military law. The military has absolute power. Let me repeat that. Absolute power of life and death over the person they're facing at that moment in the street. Pow, a bullet in the head, move on if that's what they're going to do. That's the kind of power they have. That is the power that they executed over the past century, last century, the 20th century. The 21st century we're coming into here. So this is the kind of power that they have executed in martial law. That's what's coming to America, people. That's what we have. Unless we do something about it, we're going to have it here tomorrow. And I don't mean literally tomorrow, but figuratively tomorrow. It is coming to America. We have it coming here.
And, hey, you know what, John? They really don't have the absolute power. That's baloney, too, because, look, they don't have a right to put a bullet in an unarmed man's head.
If the people don't argue it and can't do nothing about it, they have it.
Look at what happened in Vietnam.
But it's not just Chinese. But it is Chinese. In Vietnam, it happened. In Germany, it happened. Gestapo will come in, they'll take you out and shoot you. You are a patriot. You're on a list. They're gonna take you around back and shoot you. It's over with. That's what Nazis do. That's what communists do. That's what fascists do. They get rid of their enemies. Well, even in Russia, I don't know how many millions of people. What was that clown's name? Stalin. When Stalin took over, I don't know how many millions and millions of people. He may be one of the people who killed most of the people in history. I mean, his numbers are in many millions. His first order of business was going out through the country, killing every person he thought was a political enemy of his, and he was so paranoid he killed millions of people.
The mob does it too, and in America they haven't disarmed us yet, so they won't do it in America either.
Look what they're doing out west. Look what they did to the Bundys. Look what they did to the Hammonds. Look at the Bundy stories. They're coming down the street. They get pulled out of a car, children and all, put down onto the street, face down, guns to the head. These people in full military gear, and we're in America. We're in Oklahoma. We're in Arizona. We're in Idaho or Nevada. It's happening right here. Right, these people are criminals. They're evil, and they get deeper and deeper and deeper into things. And I can see it easily. These people taking lives without a thought. Look, we know they got to get rid of a lot of people because that's their plan. There's no way you can sell me any idea that they're going to be so nice to us. They're not going to have any compassion. And if your name is on the list, why are they going to be bothering to feed you or put you in? They're just going to throw you in a hole. So that's my opinion anyway.
It's my opinion it's not going to be a cakewalk because they haven't done what they need to do. And, yeah, they're only going to hit a few people before the rest of the armed public realizes it. And we don't want that because what's going to happen is you're going to have 100 years war. It's going to be horrible. Look, we're the most technologically advanced, the most armed nation in the world. That's the reason they haven't done anything. That's why they're doing all the smoke and mirrors and all the psyops, because they're worried. And as long as we can stick together and do what we're doing, we have a chance, because they really don't have us yet. They want us to think they have all this stuff. I don't even believe that their technology is where they say it is. It is, but they don't have the infrastructure. They got a bunch of buffoons running it. I'm telling you, if we stick together, they're done. We just have to have that critical mass.
Well, that's the key.
That's what this is about. And we have the resources to do, and we have
the... But here's the problem. Here's the problem with that, and people need to realize this problem right now, right this minute. They need to understand this. We have not accomplished that goal yet. We can accomplish that in 2, 3, 4, maybe 6 months, if people take this serious and do something about it. But we won't have the time or the ability to accomplish that if martial law comes in the next 2 weeks. We just are not going to be able to do it at all. We have to do whatever it is we can do to prevent martial law. And I don't believe there's anything, there's only two things that are going to stop martial law in America. Two things only. One is the thing that we're doing to put the light of the truth and to shine it on their evil, evil deeds. That's it. Rex 84, I think it's called. Let's let the people know. Let's put it on the paper. Let's put it in the courthouse. Let's put it on the floor of Congress. Let's put it in the halls of the governor. Let's get it out there. That's one. And the only other one is that they feel and collectively come to the conclusion and they're not ready. Those are the only two ways. Okay, that I see that's going to prevent martial law from coming to America probably in the next few weeks because, again, you know, I'm presuming, I'll tell you this, if you can't buy gold and silver, then the relationship of all things in this country, the panic will go through this nation in no time, and everything will react to it. The market will react to it. Everything will react to the fact that you can't buy gold and silver. If you can't use a dollar to buy gold and silver, and you can't exchange a dollar for some other kind of funding, you know, some other kind of form of money, then you'll be paying $1,000 for a loaf of bread. That's where we're going to be. We have to stop the insanity. And if it's very close in their debates, because I do believe that there's arguments between them, and I certainly hope, you know, I'm praying that maybe this is God's will to take them down by turning them against each other. We've seen it so many times in history. We read about it last week in the Bible, how many times God took them out that way, by turning themselves against them. The one time when the nation of Israel came over the mountain to take their enemy, and everyone was dead, because God had turned each one of them against themselves. And he sent, 300 men with lights, with lamps. 300 men with lamps and swords, and thousands of people fled. Because they didn't, God mixed them up so much, they couldn't comprehend what was going on. Or they just, their perception was thrown off. So all that's possible.
And God uses psyops too, huh?
Oh, absolutely. Hey, look at, you know, who knows? Look at, they got this AI thing, and maybe someone's got into that already. And when they execute it, it's going to go against them instead of us.
Well,
the orders will go out to kill the elite instead of the people.
Look, I don't believe that they're ready to come up against the people, but I think they would rather have, like, the grid shut down and let us eat each other and then come in and clean up later.
Yeah, that's the way to go.
And because I don't think that they can do it. Look, Obama's the best gun salesman ever. Every time he opens his mouth, another you know, hundreds of thousands of guns hit the street, and they know that. So they want to create a false flag that makes it look like there's a force from outside that you know, is coming in, and we're under attack, and the only way that we'll come out of that is, number one, that we keep communicating, and number two, that we have strong communities that band together to use the resources in that community to help that community to survive and to help their sister communities. That's how it's going to work, you know. So they may shut the grid down, And as long as we can communicate through ham radio and whatever other technologies we have, as long as we do it, you know, but when they come back over here to clean up, they will find communities, local communities, the government level, at the county level, intact under the Constitution, under the law of the land. That will really, really mess them up. And that's the answer right there. You've got to get involved in your at the county level, and down, and get your towns and your counties and your cities off of this whole federal dole that they use to control them by taking federal monies, which are our monies to begin with anyway.
Three-letter acronym, COS, Committees of Safety.
There you go. So that's the point. Get together with your neighbors in your communities. Do your COSs, because your COSs can also, look at every COS is going to deal with its local community stuff, whatever's going on in the town boards, and that they, you know, where you have a town board that shuts people out. The COS is the answer for that, because you can actually come and discuss things, and there's no controlling force to stop you. Like, some of these town boards don't let you speak and all this other stuff. So you have your own assembly of people, and you hash these problems out. And then once you talk about them and you bring them, then you could even bring them into a town board meeting, and you can bring your people into that meeting. And at that point, then you'll actually get something done. You know, when the people assemble, that's when they're going to have trouble. When we assemble with a common purpose, and the COS is a common purpose, and it has a charter, And it's a very simple thing to implement to keep everybody on that path. And so, you know, I can't say enough about that. People need to start doing that, because that's the self-help thing. If you don't help yourself, you can't turn and expect somebody else to, because they'll give you help, but you're not going to like the help that they give you. They're going to help you into a jail cell, basically, and maybe even give you a job. And some people might actually like it over there, you know what I mean? But myself, I want to ride free on the open range. I don't want to be told what to do. Anyway.
All right. Any other questions there?
Just the how did the Committee of Safety presentation at Pastor Manning's church on Saturday, July 30th go, and what was the turnout like? I don't remember if we gave a rundown. I think we did. Maybe this was Gary. Maybe he missed it.
Well, how many people were there? About 30 or roughly?
There was people from NLA, but his church, there was probably 30, 50 people from his church. And then we had the contingency from New York City that came up, you know, Lydia and her people. So I don't know, but there was...
And it went very well. The people received the message. We haven't gone back down to check on things, and we've been so busy, and we'd like to, but, you know, we got to sow the seed and move on and, you know, sow some more seeds. And that's all the best we can do. We'll give them whatever support they want, or they have to now come to us and really just nurse off of our website whatever information they want. And we put it all on one page. It's all in one place. If they look at everything on that COS page, they will see all the tools and everything necessary, and they can create their own and make their own things up because they're the people. They're free to do so. But there is the framework, and there is a lot of tools up there on that page. So all they have to do is go up there and take it. We've got even some audio up there. So, all right, any other questions?
That's it, John.
Okay, we're going to move over to Brent. Brent, you'll have to hit star 6. We had muted you a while ago. There was a little noise coming out. So star 6 to unmute yourself, Brent. And you just unmuted. You're good. Okay, now Brent Winters, he's going to be talking to us tonight. He is the author of The Excellence in the Common Law. His website is commonlawyer.com. Brent?
Thanks, John.
Thank you.
You'd mentioned a while ago about martial law, and this did come up.
On that a little bit about that with the military. But go ahead.
And all these things bear repeating. And if you're like me, and I've read this in books written by people who know a lot more about the subject than me, and I learned this in politics too. They used to tell us in politics, people have to hear something on an average, the same thing, at least 7 times before it can sink in. And that's not because we're stupid necessarily. It is because we're distracted. The cares of this life close in on us hard. We've got to make enough money to make the rent. And because of that, our minds are preoccupied. And so the thing that really matters, the things, plural, that really matter, it doesn't always get through. It's the principle that we see between Mary and Martha. And one of them chose the thing that was important and was not bothered by the cares of this life, as admirable as that is. For example, in that case, fixing a decent meal for guests and doing a good job of it. But there's something even more important than that. And that's the ultimate truth of the will of God. His will is His law. His law. The Bible calls it the Torah. It means, by the letters, from an old ancient root, even more ancient than the Bible, it means, in old Semitic speech, the way pointed out with the index finger. And God has pointed out the way in 2 volumes, the laws of nature, unwritten in creation, and the laws of nature's God, written in the Bible, taking those phrases from our Declaration of 76. That's what they were understood to mean at that time. That is what they meant. And that should be what we understand them to mean today, so we can understand that particular document. Martial law. Martial law. Martial law is the law of the evil empire with exceptions. And those exceptions are armies on fields of battle. When an army is on a field of battle, mustered to go on a field of battle, the common law does not apply. And I say that on the authority of the laws of nature's God written in our Bibles, because our Bible makes it clear that in God's will for a people, in His law for a government of a nation, that the law, the martial law, applies to those that are mustered into military service, such as militiamen. The book called Numbers, the fourth book, the way our Bibles are arranged, the fourth book of Moses, the fourth book of our Bible called Numbers, is a book about martial law. It's a book about military law. It's a book about the militia of the 12 separate tribes of Israel, and it is from that book, along with some also of the restatement of the law in Deuteronomy. It is from that book called Numbers that our common law ideals of the militia clauses of our Constitution has arisen and has been undergirded and reinforced when our first fathers came to America. And when I say fathers, I mean, to use the word in this sense, fathers, the ones that cut the way for us, they began things for us. When they first came here, they brought with them, by not genetics, but pretty close, they'd had it for centuries, the common laws of the Anglos, the Saxons, and the Jutes. The Jutes, those were the Danish Vikings of England. And also the Celtic tribes that lived there, their law was substantially the same. The Anglo-Saxons and the Jutes, coming from the Germanic Nordic tribes of Europe, called it the Volkreich. The Volkreich, that means the people's responsibility, and that's what the government was to them, and law was, and ought to be to us, it ought to be our responsibility, the people. And the people, of course, the Volk, as also in the Bible, the people, the Ha'am, are that class of men, males, able-bodied to carry a weapon in battle. And the martial law applies there. Why does it apply? It applies because when armies, armed men, are on fields of battle, the circumstances do not enable the full due process of our common law. It is a place where obedience to orders must be immediate, or men die. The same law is applied to ships at sea. We call that admiralty law, and the same truth applies there. Military law applies where there is no time for contemplation in the due process of the common law. And we, and God, also gives us jurisdiction to do this by that book called Numbers and some in Deuteronomy. And throughout the Bible, you see the principles repeated in various situations. But when it comes to military life and activities, I'm quoting William Franklin Fratcher, common lawyer, former prosecutor at Nuremberg, where activities admit not of delay of obedience to orders, the martial law applies. Now the problem comes when that law that is justifiable, God justifies it among military units on ships at sea, where that is taken, that law is taken and used for ease of leaders to control people. And that is called, when it's done that, it's brought on land and taken away from military units and applied to men, it's called the law of the city. In the Latin, it's called the civil law. It was first spawned at Babylon, and it was an evil. It was an evil thing to try to do to people. And if you recall the record of the settling of the city called Babylon, Genesis chapter 11, it tells there of their attempt to draw all men together in one place and do it by edifices, large, beautiful buildings, ziggurats, the archaeologists call them. We see them today also, the same principle in spirit, in the supposed beauty of the skylines of cities, cities such as New York, Kansas City, St. Louis, Los Angeles, and the great pride that goes with city life. And that's all to dupe the inhabitants of cities and shutting their mouths and doing what they're told. And the city law applies where urbanization occurs, not because it should, because it's easy to do. I'm amazed everywhere I go. I did a presentation not long ago. And it's, again, this is the application of martial law outside of the martial context. Well, before I tell this story, I must go back, and I must say that in the Declaration of 76, there is cataloged for us the law of the city. That means the martial law, the military law, taken out of the context of military life and battle and ships at sea, taken out of that context, and put into the context of non-military life for the ease of rulers to control people. Now, in our Declaration of 76, this is what the Declaration cites as the reason for separation from Britain. You've taken the martial law, the military law, the law of the city. We call it the law of the city. That means you've taken it and you've applied it to us under various labels. And you'll see there in the Declaration of 76 that that's what happened. Remember, the common law did not apply in the American plantations called the American colonies. Nobody believed it did in England. The king didn't call himself king in the colonies. He called himself king of England and in the emperor. And in the empire, he was emperor. And where the emperor is, the law of the city, the martial law, applies. Now, the law of the city, most recently, to where we can trace it, arose out of the Roman legions. The Roman legions controlled Rome. The Roman legions controlled the Roman Empire from the city of Rome. And the territory, they called it, over which Rome exercised that power, they called the territory, because it was the extent of land over which the city, in this case of Rome, extended its territory. And that territory is called the empire. An empire, in its most fundamental understanding, is the ruling of an area of land, the territory, from a city using the city law. Remember, again, to repeat it, the city law, the law in those days, the law of the Roman legions, applied to people not in the Roman legions. But remember, in Rome and all empires of the world, starting with Babylon, we just don't have as clear records, but it was all the same, no doubt. The law of the city coming out of Babylon, we do have a lot of that law written about contracts and banking, but we don't have all of it as much as we do as it was compiled at the city of Rome. And in our Declaration of 76, the Declaration complains of swarms of officers. Well, they had not taken on the word bureaucrat yet, so they didn't call them bureaucrats. The word bureaucrat arose out of France during its revolution a few years later, and administrative law had its modern birth in the modern world. That was a new label for Roman law, the law of the city. Administrative law now engulfs our country. Administrative courts, for example, the best known administrative court in America probably is the tax court, the federal tax court. The judge wears a robe, a black robe, just like a real court. They claim they follow or try to follow the rules of evidence. But there have been cases going to the Supreme Court of the United States trying to discover, get a declaration from the court, whether the tax court is under the President of the United States as part of the executive branch or whether it's part of the judicial branch formed by Congress. Congress formed it, but the President controls it. You hardly ever win in tax court, by the way. Well, that's true of all administrative courts. When you go into an administrative court, whether it be the Department of Natural Resources, the Department of Transportation with your driver's license, or any other administrative tribunal, that's the governor's, if it's in a state, or the president's tribunal. That's not an independent court. There is no jury. And there's no jury, by the way, in raw martial law. So, to recap, administrative law, the canon law of the Roman Church, that was one of the complaints in our Declaration of 76 because of the Quebec Act that had been recently passed, saying that it's all right for the people in Quebec, who happen to be French, to use the canon law of Rome as their law. It's the same as the law of the city, the canon law. It's just another label. And, of course, the complaint was that the Crown of England would try to or had a plan to extend that jurisdiction into the colonies. Well, the colonies, the American colonies, didn't like that because they said, well, you can do that to the Indians and the Pakistanis over on the other side of the world in your empire, but you're not going to do that to us. We're cousins. We're British. We have, as our Declaration of 76 puts it, they said, we have consanguinity. That means, it's a fancy word, means common blood. You're not going to do that to us. We're British, and we're entitled to the common law. It's ours. Now, the common law is not the entitlement of only those people. The common law is just another label. It used to be called many other things. It's the entitlement of every son of Adam. Always has been, always will be. But by the providence of God, and we don't know why, can't answer that question. Doesn't need to be answered, I don't suppose. For some strange reason, these principles arose among these pagan tribes called the angels, the Saxons, and the Jutes, interested, as one fellow said, only in deep drinking and high-handed gaming. They were a rotten lot. They'd kill their adversaries, and then they would pile their bodies and put iron kettles on top of the bodies and drag a few out and cook them to eat. They were hardly short of being animals, as all the people were in that part of the world at that time. But for some strange reason, out of that arose ideas of responsibility and duty for government and individual duty, not with and under some emperor. Those carried over into England, the Bible arrived within almost one century of the death of Jesus Christ among the Chaldees, and then the Bible on the isle called England undergirded that tradition with writing. And by the providence of God, it was carried eventually to America. And we are much more English than the English and the Brits, all of them on that island, now mixed also their blood, as much as they don't like to admit it, it's true, and their culture. But here we practice our common law as it was in its incipient days among early Christians in Britain. And there's been much written about that. It'd be too much to talk about now. But the martial law does apply to military life, and God sanctions it. And when it creeps out of there and government tries to apply it to people outside of military life, as the law of the city, bureaucratic law is another label, administrative law is another label for the same thing, canon law, Talmudic law, that's Phariseeism, which is all over the world too, and these are a threat. Now, along with, we can't forget to mention this, Islamic law. All of those labels are different labels for fundamentally the same thing. And that's what we face in America. And we, as Americans, if we do not commit ourselves to reinforcing, instituting, reinstituting, recommitting ourselves to the laws of nature, unwritten in creation by the Creator himself, and the laws of nature's God written in our Bibles by God himself. If we do not do that, then the vacuum that we have allowed to occur and our fathers have allowed to occur and our grandfathers, for lack of information, maybe in sincerity, they didn't know what they were doing, I don't know. But I don't want it to be said that I let happen what happened during the days of my great-grandpa and my grandpa and my father. I must say and confess, though, I am a little guilty myself. I remember when I was a teenager, when I was in my 20s, I thought America was on top of the world, and I thought we were right. And we were in many ways, and we did have the laws of nature and nature's God. But evil forces, just within the last 15 years, have overtaken us. It was said a while ago that Barack Obama, Gerard said he's the best gun salesman we ever had in America. True, true enough, of course. And I remember when it was said not too many years ago, 15, 20 years ago, that Bill Clinton was the best thing, and here's the difference, watch this. People were saying Bill Clinton is the best thing that ever happened to the Republican Party, because that's where we confined our conservatism back then. We're not saying that now. We're saying that that minion, that useful idiot, the evil empire, now sitting in the White House, as Bill Clinton did, I'm quoting the communists, that's the way they talked about those kind of people. The difference is now people are saying, we're not saying he's the best thing that happened to the Republican Party. Truth is, he's the best thing that's ever happened to patriotic Americans, people who love. What is patriotism? Well, let's go back to the word, patriot. Patriot, old word, old Latin word. It means love of land. Some people say love of country. I like to say love of land because that gets it closer to the ground. And it is the law of the land, our common law, that we are to love along with the land. And without the law of the land will be abused. It will be destroyed, and the people with it. And we are inextricably attached, all of us, to the land. And God made it that way. And there's not a person on the face of this planet, never has been, that was not wholly dependent upon land, even the people. I've seen them over in the Southeast Asia, living by the millions on those houseboats and junks. They're attached to the land, too, and they can't live without it. And it is the law of the land that we must establish. What is the law of the land? Our Constitution, Article 6, law of the land lifted from Magna Carta. Magna Carta lifting it from the laws of King Alfred. Late King Alfred had lifted it from the ancient angels, Saxons and Jutes, and the Celtic tribes and the Germanic tribes of their birthright, their people's duty, the duty of the militia of the 12 separate tribes in the Bible, of the 50 states of the Union, and the 4 militia clauses. So in light of all that history, I do want to talk a little bit about why our militia is what it is, and we cannot do that. We cannot understand the militia clauses of our Constitution, says our Supreme Court, or any part of our Constitution, unless we understand something of the fundamentals of our ancient common law, because, says our Supreme Court, our common law informs every phrase and every word of our Constitution. Our Constitution is a brief. It cannot be understood. It cannot be applied without our common law. It is utterly impossible. It is not intended to explain things, and indeed it explains nothing. Because what was there and what was said was understood by the people that ratified it. They had no trouble with that. They'd seen it, and thus the reek of gunpowder hung in their noses when they picked up the quill to scribe their names on it. Anglo-Saxon government has always and anciently been, I call it Anglo-Saxon just because I need a label. It really, as Algernon Sidney, he chopped his head off for writing this, by the way, in the late 17th century, he said that the law, the angels, and the Saxons, and the Jutes, and the Celts, the Germanic tribes, was much alike, strikingly alike, he said, not only in fundamentals, but in particulars. Listen to what William Blackstone says in his volumes on the laws of England, or common law. He said, the most remarkable of the Saxon laws we may reckon is the election of their magistrates by the people. He says, even that of their kings, election of their kings. It was not, by the way, hereditary until the Normans arrived, and even then it's been questionable since then. They elected them, and he says they also elected all subordinate magistrates. They elected their military officers, that means for their militia, their furred, as they call it. Listen to this. He says they elected their sheriffs. This is before the year 1066 A.D. he's talking about. They elected their sheriffs, their conservators of the peace, that's local peace officers, more local than even a sheriff. Remember, in those early days, a county was a country, and very independent, even though there were executives. They called them kings. King is an old word meaning authority, but they elected them. Conservators of the peace, coroners were elected before the year 1066 A.D., for centuries before that. And he said these offices continued until the Norman Conquest, that means 1066 A.D., October the 14th. And he said others continued for 2 centuries after. And he said some of these offices remain to this day. Well, this day, well, that would have been in the year 1765 when he delivered these lectures. And we can say today, over 200 years later, many of these offices still remain in common law countries. Namely, the sheriff, the coroner, and other magistrates, the port reeves, things like that, which he mentions, elected, not appointed by the governor. After the Normans came, the king appointed the sheriff, he was his agent in the county to ride herd for his information and to make sure things were done the way he wanted them. Well, when we started America, we harked back. Magna Carta tried to do the same thing, by the way, tried to hark back before 1066. Our Constitution says Justice James Wilson of our U.S. Supreme Court, the first justice on the court with two others, he said our government, our common law, is more like the law of the Anglo-Saxon. And it was an attempt to reach back and pick up their fundamental truths. He's absolutely correct. I'd mentioned the hundreds, and the hundred courts as divisions of the counties and the colonies of America. We call them today townships, but in Delaware, they still call them hundreds. And today in Delaware, there are 33 hundreds, 33 of them. The number that had formed, they kept dividing them until the year 1875 with the population, and it's been fixed at the present day number 33 hundreds. And they had their own courts in the early days. Each hundred, each township had its own court. It was the beauty and the glory, also said Blackstone, of our common law, Anglo-Saxon common law, that it brought a court to the door of every cottage. And they boasted of that in those earlier centuries. The court was near the door of every cottage in every village. Village. What was a village? A village is a place that has no, it's a settlement that has no marketplace in English speech. A town is a settlement that has a marketplace. London is still called a town for that reason, by the way. Some people call it the City of London, but I remember growing up learning that it was London Town. Well, the Anglo-Saxons' freedom to choose their officers and to reject hereditary succession persists in common law countries, and that is why we elect our presidents and our governors of the sovereign states, because our common law in America was an attempt, our Constitution, too. It was a massive movement, not just our Constitution of the United States, but among the thinking of those in the individual states, to hark back to the law, the laws of King Alfred and the laws of Edward the Confessor, the last Anglo-Saxon king of England. As did they, we still elect our local sheriffs. This is ancient that we do this. Our coroners, our tax assessors, and we even elect our judges, our magistrates, that's what they used to call them. And then we cast our vote for state governor and national president. Well, the Anglos and Saxons and Dane tribes in Britain transacted their government business by a consensus of all. A consensus of all. That means everybody had a say. As a practical matter, what that meant is this. Sydney makes much of this. It means this. All men were consulted for every decision, either directly or indirectly. Indirectly, yes. In other words, they had representatives, just as we do today. But for things of great moment and important decision that affected people and impacted them in a powerful way, they had a list of things like that. Everybody had to weigh in on those. But for the day-to-day doings of government, it just took the indirect vote, as we do today, with our state legislatures and our Congress, our national legislature. Algernon Sidney put it this way. He said they did it this way. Concerning minor things, they consult the leading men. Minor decisions, consult the leading men. Major decisions, they had to consult everyone. Well, that's the way, of course. That's the way, of course, that corporate law runs today, too, by the way. Not always a good thing for different reasons, but Britons, in the early days of Britain, the earls, or the jarls, as they used to call them, they chose their kings, allowing them to rule with the consent and by their advice. Now, I'm talking about kings here, the old Anglo word king, because the kings didn't have any power among the Anglo-Saxons unless they declared war. That's where they really had power. Other than that, they didn't have much at all. Men governed themselves, both right, people's duty, and they did it. And by the way, they had ways to enforce men to do their duty. And if they didn't do their duty, then everybody by the jury would correct them. Even in cases of murder, families enforced that duty. And that lasted until, by the way, not too many centuries ago. And it still persists in our law in some ways, enforcement of private rights. That's why we have juries. But Britain, of course, has drawn back from these ancient standards quite a bit, even doing away with their grand jury in Britain back in the 1930s. We have it because it's in our part of our Constitution. And we've said and declared it to be the supreme law of the land. But we still have an electoral college to choose the president, allowing him to exercise authority only. This is from our Constitution of the United States. There are certain things he can do only with the advice and the consent of the United States Senate. He must seek their advice, and he must have their consent to appoint judges, to appoint major cabinet members and officers of government. That comes from our common law. As a matter of fact, I've got a document, don't have the original, a document going back to the time when King Alfred the Great in the 9th century was a 9-year-old boy. And the transference of land, 10 acres and 2 wagon loads of wood, the man who was king at that time wanted to transfer it. That was King Alfred's father. He couldn't even transfer his own property without the advice and consent of the elders assembled. And then they had to put it in writing, and they of course had a priest. English wasn't even written in those days. They didn't have it in writing, but the priest could write Latin. So they had a clergyman write out the document, and they all signed it, giving their consent to the king to sell 10 acres of land and 2 wagon loads of wood. He didn't have much power, but now when they declared war, when the Witten, the elders, declared war, then by doing so, they handed him martial law power. And, of course, he who has the power to give has also the power to take, and they had that too. So it was very much different from Rome, you see. It didn't work that way in Rome. It was their power, and it got worse as time went on. They started out not bad, but it got worse. For example, because enemy attack demands an armed answer. When an enemy attacks a country, that demands an armed answer, an answer of hostility, and it must be quick and sharp. And the elders in Anglo-Saxon England, the Witten, wit means, by the way, it means to have wits. Means to be wise, and they, of course, believed that older men were wiser, and so they called them the Witten. They empowered the king to muster the ferd when they declared war. That means the militia of able-bodied males, able-bodied to bear a weapon, that empowered him to muster them in for war, and then he still had to have their consent before he commenced hostilities. He had to have their consent. Now, we see this in our common law past, and not our country, but a country that we're related to in many ways, and that's England. And I remember reading about the beginning of World War II when Britain began war with Germany. And they did the same thing in World War I. They could not, even though they were mustered, even though war was declared, they could not start to fight until the national legislature, parliament, through the prime minister, the head of parliament, said the words, commence hostilities. Commence hostilities, that's an ancient principle of our common law. By declaring war, the executive had the power to muster the militia, the ferd. But he did not have the power to commence hostilities until he was given the word. Well, that's the way our country would work well, I think, and we've struggled with that for a long time, to the point that we've even passed what we call the War Powers Act of Congress passed it to control presidents that seem to be taken with the idea that they just want to take the army and the navy and go blow up whatever country they think they ought to be blowing up. It might be fun, or maybe I have a personal vendetta against the leader of another country, as was said of the Bushes in going to war over on the other side of the world twice. Those are the kind of things our common law government should stop, and our Constitution has much to say about that. There are four militia clauses, but the rest of the Constitution bears upon those militia clauses by telling us what the powers of the President of the United States are. And our common law informs all of that and limits the powers of the President. And where power migrates into the hands of a single will, the hands of a single will, and you can't get it out and you can't limit it, you will be under a tyrant. And that's what the danger is constantly and we're always facing. That's why we say the only remedy to the lawlessness we see, and it is lawlessness for that to happen, is law. And I want to promote the true law, the laws of nature, and the laws of nature's God, hope you do too, and put them in place more and more and more to fill the vacuum, because the vacuum otherwise will be filled by the law of the evil empire, the law of the city, under its many confusing labels. Talmudic law, Sharia law, Roman law, city law, bureaucratic law, and it is martial law in every case, martial law, taken out of its right and proper role of armies on fields of battle and ships and men at sea. That's all I've got for today. That's long enough, John. Appreciate it.
Okay, thank you, Brent. All right, we'll take questions. We'll go to Q&A. Give me a minute to set that up. All right, if anybody has any questions or comments for Brent, star 6 to get into the Q&A, and I think it'll tell you to press 1 after that, but star 6. Okay, yeah, go ahead, Jen.
I had a comment and then a question for Brent that was sent in. First comment, we actually had a question sent in this week that was in the form of a zip file attachment. Now, I don't think there's any question on God's green earth that would take up that amount of memory that it would need to be a zip file. And
right. I would never open up a zip file.
So please do not send us any attachments with questions. If you have a question, please limit it to what you can put on an email. If you have an attachment to it, it'll be summarily just deleted. Then the question for Brent
is... Yeah, I'd like to just make the advice for people who don't realize this, but I think most people do, but just in case. If you don't know the person, and even if you do know the person, you should make sure you talk with the person, make sure they sent you a zip file before you open it, because that definitely can execute something on your computer. Go ahead, Jen.
Okay, for Brent then. My question is about contempt of court. I disagree that judges can hold anyone lawfully in contempt of court by putting them in a jail cell. Judges are bound by the Constitution, the Fifth Amendment, and no one should be allowed to deprive anyone of their liberty just because they became a little unruly in a courtroom. It makes no sense that would give the power to a judge when they are the guardians of our rights and not the jailers of our rights. The supreme law of the land makes no provision for this practice, and I believe that judges are acting outside the law. I don't mean to beat a dead horse, but I totally disagree that judges have that authority. Your thoughts? Thank you.
Well, I appreciate the question, and I appreciate his or her candid honesty about what they believe. It is the rule of the common law has been for centuries, and I believe it's been proven. A judge has power in the courtroom, we used to say, equivalent to the power of captains of ships at sea. That's sometimes true, but the reason for that is to keep order in the courtroom. No judge that's worth his salt will allow any chaos in his courtroom. It is the place where order must be observed. I'll give you a case in point. This would be federal district court in California. And the case concerned the Chief Justice of the state of California. It was a sordid case and had to do with divorce and a lot of crazy things. It ended up in murder, by the way, an attempted murder of a Supreme Court justice. Because the Supreme Court justice was sitting as a federal district court judge, as Supreme Court justices have done since the beginning of our country. They take the circuit and sit as a federal judge, sometimes an appellate judge by invitation. He was sitting, and the Supreme Court, former Supreme Court justice, got angry, and he got violent. He had a knife and a gun. The U.S. Marshal, or the bailiff that was there, it was kind of the U.S. Marshal, but they had the job of a bailiff, tried to restrain him. He was a big man, almost 6.5 feet tall, not the marshal, the Supreme Court justice. And he hit him so hard in the face it knocked out all of his front teeth. And, of course, probably messed up his neck for the rest of his life, not to mention that. Well, the judges had to decide what to do. And they concluded that he had committed a crime. They thought long and hard about it because he was Supreme Court Chief Justice of the state of California, or had been. And they didn't want to do anything more than they had to, but they finally determined that they'd jail him for 6 months for a crime. Now, that's criminal contempt. You tell the judge off in his presence, and God says that we're not to do that. God says, do not speak evil of the magistrate, especially in his presence. You can criticize his decisions. You can do a lot of things, but you can't relegate him to hell. Let me be real specific about that. Relegate, no man has authority to relegate anybody to hell. And if you do that, you've told God to get out of the way and scoot over, you're going to sit in the throne with him. And God says, I'm not going to allow you to do that. It's crime to do that before God. But criticism is quite another matter. But judges have to have the power to hold men in contempt for bringing disorder to justice in the courts. Now, the judge may be wrong in the way he does it. As a matter of fact, if it's not criminal contempt and it doesn't rise to that, he's not allowed to do it, and he'll be corrected if he does. But as far as civil contempt goes, if it's not a criminal matter, a person just refuses to abide by the judge's order. I talked to a fellow yesterday who was just convicted criminally, and he had said that he, and he, I think he's listening. I, of course, wouldn't mention any names, but he had said that the judge wanted him to come up past the bar so he could talk to him, and he didn't want to do that. And he had good, sincere reasons why he didn't want to do it. And I understand why he didn't want to do it. But nonetheless, when a judge, you're in his courtroom, and he tells you that he wants to talk to you, it doesn't make any difference whether he's right or wrong. You can appeal it later. Our common law says that if you don't obey the judge in his courtroom, now if the judge tells you to commit a crime, that's, you don't want to have to do that, of course. He tells you to murder somebody, or he tells you to slug somebody, or I don't know what he would tell you, but there's limits. To say that a judge doesn't have the power to hold, to jail people for contempt, I believe is a stretch. Without exception, to say that without exception, certainly a judge can do that. I talked to a fellow not long ago. I was on a radio show, and we got off, and the host, another fellow, said, we want to talk to you. I said, okay. So we got off, and we talked for a while, and I was trying to figure out what they were getting at, what they wanted. And finally, he said, I've been arresting people. I've been arresting people that are committing crimes. I said, well, do you arrest them because you caught them in the very act of committing a felony? He said, well, not always. I said, well, if you don't, as a citizen, if you've got to catch him in the very act, and if you don't catch him in the very act and arrest him on the spot, you've lost your chance and you don't have authority to arrest him. That's common law rule, as far as I know, in every state. It's in statutes in some places. They just put it in a statute. He said, well, I'm going to take it to court then on this one matter. And he said, if the judge rules flatly against what is true, I'm going to arrest him. And somehow I thought, now that doesn't seem right, arresting a judge. Even if he commits a felony, as long as he's not trying to kill anybody, I don't believe there's much you can do there. And finally I said to him, you know, at common law, again, for centuries, I talk about the ancient law as much as I can. I don't want to talk about some newfangled ideas. I want to stick to the fundamentals. I said anciently, it's always been against the law to arrest a judge while court is in session. If he's committing a felony and court's in session, unless somebody's in physical danger, you're not allowed to arrest him. He said, well, then I just wait till the court's over and arrest him. Well, I said, no, at that point you can't arrest him either because you haven't got him right in the act of committing the felony. So as a practical matter, probably I would just say, no, I don't think I'll be trying to arrest any judges because the judge has power of contempt, power to jail people for contempt, and, well, for ruining, destroying the order of his courtroom. That's my understanding of the law, and I don't believe it's such a bad law. Matter of fact, I believe it comports with the Bible, not only expressly, but in the tenor of a lot of it, what I can read in the Bible. That's all I got to say, John. Appreciate the question and bringing it up, though.
All right. Well, I'd like to just ask a little bit extension on that. You had mentioned something about when they went to arrest the judge that they thought quite long on it before they decided to do something. If someone's held for contempt, criminal contempt, in a court, then I think at that point they should give him due process after, before giving him, saying, contempt of court, you know, you're going to sit in jail X amount of days. What do you think about that point of view?
I like that, and there are many judges that do that, and I've seen it done. And judges ought to do that. I agree with you, John. That's sensible. I mean, that's common. It's a part of our... It appeals to my common senses. I think it does to yours, too, or you would have said it. And
right.
It ought to be done. I think that I can see what you're saying. The judges have a lot of leeway. You know, the very definition of a judge is a man that has a lot of discretion. Discretion is what it's all about. You know, there's only two kinds of people in this world. There are people who have discretion. We call those freemen. And people who do not have discretion. We call those slaves. Slaves have no discretion. They are to follow the orders of their master. By the way, bureaucrats and military men are not to exercise much discretion. They're to follow orders, especially bureaucrats. People in administrative law roles, working for administrative agencies, and the law says they have no discretion. None. They are to follow the law and the regulations exactly. Well, I just throw that out for your concern. But a judge, by distinction, is very much different. He's a man that has lots of discretion. The point you raised, John, was a good one. I had thought to bring that up. I'm glad you did.
Okay. All right, yeah, so I would think due process still has to be given, and that could be done within a reasonable amount of time after that person's removed from the courtroom. Okay, let's take our next, our first question. Well, not second, I guess. Ann from South Carolina, it looks like. Go right ahead, Ann. You got the mic.
Hi, thank you for taking my question. Number one, on our ham radio repeater station call, hang on, I'm going to get off. Oh, no. Can you hear me well?
We can hear you good, yeah.
Okay. On our ham radio repeater thing, we talked about that gas and problem. Last Thursday, I drove up Highway 85, and the gas at the three gas stations on the freeway were all 194. I went to my chiropractor and came back, and QT had raised it to 209 in that half hour, and Marathon had kept those at 189, and the other two stations, TA and somebody else, did not raise theirs. I could not see why they raised it. It wasn't until I was on the ham call that I got it. But it is improving around here, supposedly. It kind of baffles your mind that this kind of stuff goes on. Number two point I want to raise is the fact I thought we were in martial law before our speaker spoke, since 1861, because it never got taken off, because there was no treaty, there was no end of the Civil War. And so if we're in martial law, however, with what our speaker was saying about martial law being only military, it doesn't apply to the people. So why have we been having trading with the enemies? Why are we having all these different things that have been put on us as a direct result of martial law? and the different kinds of insanity we've had. And another thing, I've had contempt of court thrown at me quite a few times, and I've actually been thrown in jail for contempt of court. And the reason I was thrown in jail was the fact that I was defining what it was that the court was in dry dock, and it was under admiralty law, and he didn't like how close I got to really revealing it to those in the courtroom. And I believe that's why I was thrown in jail, and they didn't know what to do with me. Once they'd done the actual movement, I mean, the cops surrounded me as if I was a dangerous woman and all this other stuff, and they were going to give me 30 days and everything. Well, it got to be 6 days, and I got absolved of all the stuff I was put in court for from an unlawful roadblock. So those are the 3 points that I want to bring up, and I'll rest my case. Thank you for letting me share.
Okay, thank you. Do you want to respond to any of that, Brent?
Oh, just briefly, this thing about the Civil War, and that comes up a lot, and I've read a lot about it, and there was no treaty. And, well, the reason there was no treaty was because the northern tier of states never recognized, didn't declare war either, by the way, but they didn't recognize that the southern tier of states was a foreign country. They never did recognize them as a foreign country. They had their own president, they had their own government, they had everything, but they refused to recognize them as a foreign country, and because of that, then they were entitled to treaty status. That's why that didn't happen. Now, for right or wrong, and I'm not making a judgment about whether it was right or wrong, but that was what the war was about. The war was about you're us. You can't split away from us. The Union is indissolvable, among many other things the war was about, but that was one of them. That was the rallying cry for men in the North, and they fought, they said, I mean, there are gravestones around where I live of families of people I know where it says right on the gravestone, he fought to save the Union, you know, stuff like that. So it wasn't a matter of a foreign power. They didn't look at it that way. And there was such massive legal confusion going on in those days, and the martial law jurisdiction. But the Supreme Court of the United States, this is just one example. I think I mentioned this last time. The Supreme Court of the United States said, after the war, in the state of Indiana was the place where it happened, the common law courts were open, martial law does not apply here. And if the Supreme Court has made that ruling, I take it to be true that martial law does not apply in the state of Indiana, and of course that ruling would apply to all the other states as well. But know this for sure, and don't let this escape from your mind. The story of the history of mankind, from the founding of Babylon forward, even before then, but most assuredly and expressly and pronouncedly at the founding of Babylon, the story of mankind is the story of the war of power between the law of the land and the law of the city. It will never stop this side of the Messiah himself coming and returning. This is the fight that we've been given. This is the fight that defines every war that we've had in America with other countries. We went to war with Japan because they had taken on the German code of Bismarck, and they deified their emperor, and they all had to do exactly what he said. And then they said, well, he says, yeah, we got to kill you. And we said, well, we don't agree. Our God doesn't agree with your God on that. Our lawgiver says that that's not right, and if you're going to continue to do that to us, we're going to have to stop you. Well, the same thing was true with Germany. World War I, the Code of Bismarck came to full force, and they began to do things that of which other men didn't agree. Then World War II came, same thing. And then Hitler used the Code of Bismarck to gather all the power in his hands, and we went to war. Men do not go to war for any other reason if they've got an idea of the true God and the true lawgiver, if it has sway in that country. The only reason to go to war is because we cannot agree on an objective standard whereby to govern our relationship with another country. And we could not agree with Japan, and we could not agree with Germany. We could not agree on an external objective standard whereby to govern our relationship. They said, we believe in the law of the city. And we said, well, we don't. We follow the law of the land, and we got to Nuremberg. I've mentioned this before. It bears repeating. Got to Nuremberg. the great fight at Nuremberg before the prosecutions of the Nazi war criminals was, what law do we use to prosecute these Nazis? The law of the city, of Germany, of France, of Italy, of all of Europe, of all of the world, almost? Or should we prosecute them under the law of the land, our common law, of England, the United States, Canada, Australia, New Zealand? And the choice was made to prosecute the Nazis under our common law, because if they knew, if they prosecuted them under the law of the city, the civil law, the law of Rome, that none of them could have been convicted, because it is complete defense to every crime in all of the world except the common law countries. It's complete defense that you obey the government. It's always been that way. This is nothing new. But know of a surety that in our United States, the law of the city, the martial law, has always been pressing in on us. It has infiltrated us. It will always infiltrate us. There was a massive push after the Civil War to put it in place, and it turned our Constitution upside down, this whole military jurisdiction thing. Did a lot to hurt us, no question. But to say that, I'm not willing to say that we're under military jurisdiction, because no non-military person is of right by the law of God under military jurisdiction. I don't care what the government says. And that's what the Supreme Court of the United States said after the Civil War in the case of the man that was tried and convicted and sentenced to be hanged by military court in Indianapolis, Indiana. The Supreme Court said no. He appealed up. He said, no, you can't do that. The common law courts are open. The military courts have no jurisdiction here. Now, that's the fight we're facing. When Sharia law comes, because it's going to be that ugly. If it does, God help us, hope it doesn't. But the way to stop it is to say, no, this is a common law country. To do like those that started our country, they said to England, no, this is a common law country. We're entitled to our, listen to these words. They said this, October the 14th, the year 1774, the first meeting of Congress, they resolved that they were entitled to their Constitution. The Constitution wouldn't be ratified for many years, over a decade, over 12 years. But they said, we're entitled to our Constitution. Well, what did they mean by that? They meant what they called in those days, and England still calls, the unwritten Constitution of England. England has a Constitution. They call it their unwritten Constitution. We have the same Constitution fundamentally, but we call it our written Constitution, because we took that law, that unwritten Constitution, and we put it to writing. But we must do as they did and say, no, this is what we're entitled to. I don't care what you say. We're entitled to the laws of nature, and the laws of nature is God, and the processes, the due process that defines what those is. That's what we're entitled to. And to say that, oh my goodness, there's martial law governing the United States. No, there isn't. And if it's governing, it's a usurper. It's a liar. And the people that promote it are liars, and there's lots of them, by the way. Some of them sit on the bench. They promote under the guise of the common law, civil law principles. They do it in our state courts. That's because men, at their best, are still only men. At best, doesn't amount to much. And it's our job. That's why we have juries. That's why we must insist at every point. It's our job to insist upon the laws of nature and the laws of nature's God. That's our Constitution. Our organic law is the laws of nature and the laws of nature's God. The laws of nature unwritten in the nature of things in creation. The laws of nature's God written in our Bibles expressly. Well, that's enough for that, but I appreciate the comment.
Thanks, Brent. Amen to that. I couldn't agree more. And the bottom line is nullification. These people are acting under the color of law. They're acting under legislation often that is repugnant to the Constitution, that is subversion against the Constitution, subversion against we the people. And the best way to deal with that is to ignore it, number one, to call it for what it is, fraud, and deny it. And you know what? In a court of law, or any court, even the courts that they think that they're controlling, they're not going to make that argument because they'd lose. And once you put the light, that's why that judge, did that to you, and he put you in jail because he wanted to shut you up. You're absolutely right. And then they didn't know what to do with you. Absolutely right. And he wasn't sure of you. Absolutely right. And that was a little fear that he had, but he did have to shut you up, and he had to get you out of there. I go into the courts. When I go into the federal courts, I give them little clues in my paperwork to kind of signal to the judge this, that, or the other thing, the things you're talking about, but I do it very, very, you know, down and low, so to speak, and I let them know in different ways, you know, what's really going on and what he can't do. You know, if I'm in a federal court, that federal judge already knows that I will sue that court. Now, I used to not look at it that way. I'd sue the judge, you know, add him to the list and so on and so forth. But now I see it from a different perspective, most recently, since I've been learning about suing the courts and how that works. But I'd signal to him to let him know, sue the court. And you know what? You are the court. You're acting as the one of the jurors, okay, which you may or may not be, depending on if it's an equity court or whatever. You know, then he is the juror because you've elected to allow him to be so. But if he's acting under the color of law and he's not the juror, he's not the jury, he's not the tribunal, okay. Then they can't really make these decisions. But all of a sudden now, he's taken control of that court. And in any event, he now has become an officer of that court. And a court is, of course, the sovereign and the, goodness, help me with that word, Gerard, the retinue or something. But it's the sovereign and his company or his...
Is it retinue? Royal retinue? I don't know.
I think it's royal retinue, something like that.
Okay. Entourage, maybe?
Well, I use that word. It's easier to remember.
Yeah.
I just remember the federal judge repeating that to you, finishing it.
Well, he corrected my pronunciation, and I said, thank you.
you mean with your royal retinue?
Yeah, those guys, you know. So he understood. But you see, the thing is the people in the court, they don't really understand what's going on if you're being very, very subtle, very careful. And again, you try to prepare all this. If you know what you're up against in that courtroom, prepare it and put it in your paperwork and keep it subtle there. Signal the judge. Federal judges are pretty bright. State judges, they're as dumb as oxes. So, you know, it's a little hard to get through to them. And you'll end up suing them and bringing them into the federal court for denying of your due process and denying you of a right of jurisdiction and taking you into foreign jurisdictions unknown and all that other stuff. And that's the language I would use. I would never use the language you use, although I might have in the past, but I would never use it now because I understand too much. I would use the language jurisdictions unknown. That's the best thing. Because you really don't know what that jurisdiction is. You may identify it with that jurisdiction of admiralty or whatever it is that you're claiming, which is a legal jurisdiction in the proper venue. But in the case of holding that up against you, they're really mixing a lot of things together. They're kind of making it up as they go, and it's just a mishmash of some legislation that they might use that is, again, was legislated under the color of law. He's executing or exercising it under the color of law. They're all guilty of the same thing. You can get them all. And you can even get the legislators if you want, if they're still around. I think you could go after the legislators also. I'd go after all the yays and that. I might even go after all the nays, too, because look at, you know, if I was a legislator and I had to come up to vote against something and I knew it was unconstitutional, I would refuse to vote. And I'd put myself on the record, say, I'm not going to vote. No one in here could vote. This is repugnant to the Constitution. It's null and void and shouldn't happen. And I counsel all of you not to do so. And that's how I would respond to that. So in theory, you know, when we went up against these people here in New York with the gun battle that we had, okay, and we were going up against all those legislators up there, I said, no, we're not just going to go after the guys that voted, for this crazy law. We're going to go after the guys that voted against it because they empowered them by voting. They empowered them by not revealing the truth on the record and saying no. And you see, that's what we the people have to do. It's called, you know, jury nullification. It's called people nullification. We are the people. We can nullify law. Let's just say no. And if enough of us say no and ignore it and move on like they do, but steamroll in righteousness, we're going to control the courts. And that's how we do it. A lot of people like the language, and they think that they're going to say these magic words and that they're a man on the land. They're going to click their heels, and somehow all of a sudden everyone in that courtroom is going to fear you, and you're going to get everything that you need, and the court's going to go along with you and give you. That's not true. That's a lie from hell. It's not going to happen. He's going to throw you in jail like he did to you, and he's going to try to get you out of the courtroom. He's not going to know how to deal with it, maybe, or maybe he's got something figured, and he depends on how knowledgeable you become and how far you can push it and how much fear you can put into that guy's heart before he decides what he can and will or won't do to you. So anyway, that was my 2 cents. Maybe it was more like 20 cents. But. Thanks, Ann.
Thank you.
Okay, let's go to the next.
I want to just add something.
Go ahead, Gerard.
I want to add something that came up, being that you used the word nullification so many times. My buddy's son is in an advanced placement. I don't know if it's social studies or what, but they were discussing something. He said, "No, Dad, that can't happen because we have nullification." And his father said, "Where'd you learn that?" He said, "From my teacher." So here's a high school in Pennsylvania where the teacher's teaching advanced placement. I don't know if it's social studies. It can't be civics. They're not teaching civics. But he's teaching the kids that there's jury nullification. This is a good thing. When you hear things like that, that's encouraging. So I just wanted to throw that out there, that it's actually starting to maybe hit the schools. People are becoming awake, and some of these teachers are taking the initiative to teach the kids the truth.
Well, amen. And you know what? Those people building committees of safety out there, once you get your sheriff into the game, once you get all of the elected officials on the local governments within the county all into the game and they're all on board with it, then I would start moving. My next step would be to start moving into the courts, into the schools in those areas, and start demanding that civics and Constitution be taught in the classrooms, and not mushy, silly stuff. We're talking serious stuff to make sure that a proper education is given to our children. And they need also to understand about becoming a committeeman and the power and the authority of the committeeman. But, of course, that's not going to help yet until we take that part of the process back, too. But it won't hurt to start teaching them even now. Okay, let's take our next caller. Thank you, Ann. Okay, Mary from Massachusetts, you got a question or a comment for Brent?
Yes. Can you hear me, Brent? Okay?
Yeah, how you doing, Mary? I can hear you.
Yes.
You can hear it, Brent, right?
Okay. Yes, yes.
Yes. Well, now that you've gone over the martial law, where we stand since the Civil War, would you mind telling me, do you remember what the case was when the federal court said that no, the common law court is open? It's absolutely nonsense that we have martial law.
You know, I'll even find it out for you. I'm one of those kind of guys that.
It's okay.
Yeah, I remember the case. I remember the title to books I read that I like. I remember the author sometimes because I want to go back and get another one. But let me say this. If you go to the computer, type in, I know the fellow that wrote the opinion, and that was Justice Stephen Field. Stephen Field. And
what was his last name?
F, like field, like a farmer's field.
Field, okay.
Uh-huh. And he wrote the opinion. It was out in Indiana. The name Merriman is what I think of when I think of that sometimes, but it isn't Merriman. That was the militiaman case out of, during the war, out of Maryland. But that was a famous case also, had similar kind of issues. But this was more to the point. And I thought, you know what, if I talk long enough, I can pull it up on the internet and tell you what it is. But maybe,
it was the opinion of Justice Stephen Field, and the opinion was in Indiana. Okay,
the case was out of Indiana. It was a militiaman from the southern Indiana down on the Kentucky border, I believe, and somehow he got crosswise with the feds, and they dragged him up to Fort Ben Harrison in Indianapolis and tried him and sentenced him to hang. And Justice Field, after that happened, I had mentioned this case, come to think of it, last week, and I'm glad it comes up, because those kind of cases are forgotten, and they shouldn't be. They're when you heard the phrase landmark cases, it was a landmark case, and it said something that should be resounded and brought to mind often
over and over and over again. But it's purposely buried. You know, like it says in Romans chapter 1, the truth is buried and covered up in unrighteousness. And that's the way it is with good cases like that. They're buried and covered up. And the truth of them, the Sheriff Max case, same way. What a powerful case. What beautiful, beautiful language, but it's forgotten. Nobody's talking about it.
Well, I thank you. You know, I think that the boo-hoo on the people that were in Congress and that were being threatened with martial law that didn't stand up and cite the case.
Well, here's what happened, and I'm glad you brought that up, too. That's part of the whole story of that case. You know, the rest of the story, as Paul Harvey used to say, and what surrounds a set of facts that we normally don't hear really tells us what happened. And that case, there was such a hatred, such a viciousness toward the southern states. It's hard for us to imagine. Of course, 600,000 casualties. There wasn't anybody in the United States who wasn't immediately affected by the bloodshed that happened there. And they blamed it all in the South because they won, so they got to blame them, you see. And, of course, people that read about it know it's not quite that simple. But they blamed them, and so it was popular because there were so many Army and Navy veterans in the northern states. It was popular for the congressmen from those states to scream and holler about anything that disparaged in any way the power of the federal government. Again, it's hard for us to imagine. I mean, it was so bad that the Secretary of War, Stanton, he wanted to confiscate the estate of Robert E. Lee and make a military cemetery out of it for Union soldiers, and he did. And it's today called Arlington Cemetery.
Okay.
That was an ugly thing to do.
All right.
Go ahead, John. I thought it was John.
I thank you. But no, I was saying too that on what John was talking about earlier when they called Congress into that closed session and threatened martial law. In that scenario, the bank balance, you know, why would they even recognize that then if they knew that case, if they know that case?
They don't know that case. They don't know that case. Never heard of it. And they're not going to give it any shrift if they find out about it. And you try to erase it, they say, oh, that was so long ago, it doesn't even matter. But what that case gives us is a set of principles that are fundamental to the liberty in our Constitution and should not be forgotten. We should go back and read it. But it was the case about the militiaman from Indiana and Justice Field, Stephen Fields, his name. He wrote, well, of course, the other justices joined in, and they ruled in his favor, but people in the law schools, people in the Congress, everybody hated him for it. They couldn't believe he would say things like that, they said. But again, it was the mania. And when mania takes hold, we lose our liberties. Never forget it. History is incontrovertible on that point. We must keep our heads at all time.
So we should be citing this case then to bring it to people's attention that we, in fact, are under common law and not under their...
Yes, and we should be teaching it in grade school and high school, but do we? No, it should be. Government education is not going to make a habit of teaching the truth because they've got a vested interest in teaching something else. We've got to teach our children at home how to understand those things, and we need to read it to them. Read those cases to your teenage children. Talk about them to your friends, your brothers, your sisters, your neighbors. That case ought to be, I ought to post it on my website now that you mention it. Then you could go to my website. Maybe I'll try to do that later, get the site, post it somewhere on the website so you can look at it on the homepage or something.
Well, I remember you mentioning it before, so that's why I remember you mentioning it quite a while back. And I didn't jot it down, but I do thank you. I mean, at this point, if they're threatening martial law, maybe you and John could elaborate. I mean, should we be pressing that case forward John?
Well, it's one. Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead, John.
I'm sorry. We should be pressing it forward. Absolutely. Yes.
I want to make a clarification here, though. We're missing a point. The point is that, and we studied this the other in last week's lesson about what is necessary to put in martial law. You can't put in martial law with just a threat of unrest. It has to actually physically be going on. Now, if you have actual war actions going on, guess what? You're not under common law at that point because the courts are not open. So in that case, then you are under military law. You see?
But that would be anti-American, anti-constitutional, anti-common law, anti-everything.
Yeah, but if you have active hostilities on
well,
the land.
Well, that's what the militia is for.
Right. Well, I got news for you. When the militia is working and fighting, you're not under common law. You're under military law at that point.
Look,
right,
I'm happy with that as long as it's we the people doing that fighting and exercising that power and authority and knowing enough to tell the governor or the president to go to hell when he tries to make us go beyond what we know we shouldn't go. I'm good with all that at that point.
Well,
and
Congress,
yeah, if there is violence in the streets and there's war and stuff, yeah, maybe then there couldn't be no, things are suspended during that time period. But look, if we go into martial, let's say we go into a serious problem where they're trying to apply the martial law. Let's say we get committees of safety in many places and we're prevented them from doing anything. And so therefore they can't come into our counties. They can't come into certain states or whatever the case may be. But maybe they're in another state which hasn't really got their committees of safety up, and maybe they're assaulting the people, and maybe that's going on there. But that doesn't mean that here in our state, in our county, that we can't be having normal processes of law during that time. There's no violence here. Now, we may, of course, collect people to send out to that state to assist them, like every other state may be doing, hopefully, to suppress these SOBs. But, and whatever it is that we could figure out, we're the people sovereign. We can make it up as we go. We can do whatever we want. We're the ones to apply what has to be applied.
Well, John, that's what they're doing. That's what they're doing, so we have to, too.
But they don't have the power and the authority to do that.
The
point is they can't. They don't have the power and the authority to do that, though.
They cannot declare it if it's not going on.
What I'm saying is the uncharted territory is the fact that we've never had to deal with the Patriot Act.
Right.
We've never had to deal with a war on terror. What we're really in right here, if you really want to define it, is a mixed war. Our government's gone to war with us.
Well, they've made war with the people, absolutely. In 1871, with the Organic Act, they made war against we the people. And everything they built upon that has been nothing but violence against the Constitution, violence against we the people. Now, I'm not talking about everything they've done after that, but everything that they used to build upon that thought line right there. That's all.
Okay.
I think it was the 41st Congress that did that. And those people, we should dig them up and hang them. You know,
yep.
That's extreme.
Okay, well, I
of course,
you
I really don't
I
mean
John,
that.
John, I know, we're don't, all, like, well, ready to, you know, but Brent, thank you. John, thank you. Oh, Brent, there was one other case I didn't know if you heard of. It was Joint House Resolution 104. George H. Bush Sr. signed it, and it's my pet peeve. He signed it in 1991, and it's called Education Day, and he hid it in some birthday, happy birthday to some rabbi. But I believe it's Talmudic law. I'm talking about the Noahide laws?
Yes. Yeah, that happened, yeah. I'm aware of that one.
So that law is on the books now, and I believe that should be used against us. So I've got a petition going around, and people are saying to me, oh, you're crazy. I've got the bill right in the petition. And people are like, oh, that wouldn't happen here. And what it basically does is it makes you guilty of idolatry, and the punishment is beheading.
You're probably pushing what they're willing to talk about, but there's no question it was a violation of the First Amendment to make that kind of acknowledgement. I want to make a mention. When Gerard mentioned a while ago about common law courts being open, and that was a good point. There was read a story during Shays' Rebellion. Was it Shays or the Whiskey Rebellion? One of those rebellions up in New England. Those people was raising Cain about something up there, and they were convinced that this one judge was supposed to come and open court. And there was such hatred of government at that time, men were armed, and everybody told him, don't come down here, they'll kill you if you try to come down here and open court. And so this fellow said, well, if I don't open court, that means the common law is not enforced and the martial law is going to prevail. So he dressed up in his, he was a Continental soldier during the War for Independence, he dressed up in his uniform, put his sword on, He was an old man, and he rode into town dressed like that. And, of course, everybody followed him and surrounded him, and he got off, walked inside the court, and people followed him in, crowded in around him. He banged his gavel and said, "Is any business for this court?" Nobody said they had any business. So he banged his gavel and said, "Court is closed," and got on his horse and left. That's the kind of fortitude that we need just to say, and Gerard made the point, I'm making it again, the common law courts, as long as they're open, no, the law says the military law doesn't apply, and we need to do all we can in every way, every little way, every big way, everything we say, every day, everything we do to keep our common law courts viable and open and trial by jury a reality. We talk about it. We read about it. We educate ourselves. We listen. That's why you're on these calls, so you can get it into your head. And whatever you fill up with, sooner or later, it's going to start coming out in your words and your actions. And God help us, I hope that's what happens.
Hey, Brent.
Thank you. Thank you very much. And, John, if you want to look up that Joint House Resolution 104, or if you even want to email me, or I can email it to you, the article I have on it, it's really disturbing. And we should be working to repeal that.
Well, email it. Would you email it to my web or the website, commonlawyer.com?
I will. I will do that.
Yeah, and you can also you can also email it to questions at nationallibertyalliance.org, and we'll take a look at it too. Questions.
Okay. Thank you very much, guys. I yield. Thank you.
Thank you.
Great night,
Brent. Brent, you made a couple of really good points that I never realized. You revealed something that is very profound as far as the war between the North and the South. You said they never recognized the South as a foreign government. So therefore they weren't under martial law. And look, even if they had recognized them as a foreign government and they were under martial law, wouldn't that only count for the Southern states then?
Well, yeah, I see your point. But that's masking. It's also confusing because they didn't know, the Constitution didn't speak direct enough to it to make it just clear what they should do. War was never declared because they said, "You're not our enemy. You're our own country. We're not going to declare war against you."
The people that are saying that we're still under martial law are giving credibility to the fiction. Is all they're doing.
That's exactly what
they're taking something that's. That's over 200 years old, and bringing it to today and say we're still under that. Never was.
That's a time when you pull up their words against themselves. You remember how we go into court? Oh, that was 20, 30 years ago. There's been other decisions since then. You know, pull that stuff back up on also. Hey, look, that was 200, that was 150 years ago or whatever it was, 135, 40 years.
Yep,
it wasn't
right.
Even a civil war.
The truth of the matter is, it's null and void, it's illegal, it's unconstitutional, it's null and void, ignore it, and treat it for what it is if it's ever brought up, and that's fraud. Fraud again, and violence against the Constitution, violence against we the people, subversion against the United States of America. There's nothing more to that than that. And believe me, they would never argue it up in court. You know, Bill Thornton, a lot of people have come and look into this law, you know, this man on the land stuff and make their arguments to use some of this language and stuff. And Bill Thornton has mentioned this numerous times. Often there's no need to bring up anything with your Social Security, your license, because they certainly aren't. And since they're not going to bring it up, they're not going to use it against you. So why even bother? Why even bother muddying up the court, making dust and clouds in the court, smoke, so that everything gets all confused? And you look like a nut, too, by the way. So just ignore it and go forward and hold up the law of the land. And if you make a good argument on the court, on paper and in the courtroom, and you also turn around and you also make the point in your papers, okay, that you're signaling the judge about certain things, you'll have a pretty good control to some degree in that courtroom. You never know what that judge is going to do, of course, but you know what? You have a shot at it. Anyway,
Thank you
very much. Okay,
thank
you. Okay, we're going to move over to Gerard. Let Gerard take control of the helm. We're pretty close to the end anyway. Brent, thanks a lot for your responses, and we'll see you next week.
Thanks, John. Lord willing, thanks.
Okay, let's move over to Gerard. You got the controls. You need a mic, though.
Hello?
Yeah, I unmuted him. I said we got Terry from New Jersey. Okay.
Okay.
Yeah, hello. I just wanted to clear up a couple of things here because I noticed that there's a lot of misinformation going on, especially like terminology and that type of thing. And I'm sure everybody's heard that BAR stands for British Accredited Registry. And I'm looking at Black Law Dictionary. It says, in a courtroom, the railing that separates the front area where the court business is conducted from the back area. And I was just wondering, is there any validity to this British accredited registry thing? Because I've never seen any authoritative discussion of that.
Well, the BAR does mean the British Accredited Registry, and that's what they're part of. That's what their card comes from. But that rail that you cross, that's a different idea, right? The two are not the same. And we don't give credibility to that because it's kind of stupid. You're in the court. Look, if the judge is like the captain of a ship and he tells you to come up above the BAR, you better do it. He's going to hold you in contempt. You're going to end up in jail over that disagreement you have with him. Look, by not going over that BAR, you don't retain any rights. Believe me, he can throw you in jail. So what do you think you're accomplishing? You know, if you don't want to give him, if you don't want to recognize his jurisdiction, you're supposed to do that in the paperwork that you put in before you get there or after you leave. I mean, that's the safest way. But
bear in mind, the BAR is in contempt of court. The BAR is assaulted upon our liberty, upon us. It is the BAR that teaches subversion. And as a matter of fact, there is U.S. code that talks about anybody, any organization, any group of people, anybody who teaches subversion against the United States of America is guilty of subversion themselves. And we've used that in court already. We've used that in our paperwork that we have filed with the 94 federal district courts. So you see, look at almost everything these BAR lawyers are taught, just about everything almost, okay, is nothing but assaultive upon the Constitution. They teach them never to look at the Constitution. Look, we were taught by a BAR lawyer, okay? We were taught how to get into the courts, how to figure things out, okay? And it was a BAR lawyer that taught us. But he was kind of ignorant to some degree, and, you know, we could tell, especially as we got a little more knowledgeable and would look at the things he was teaching us. But nevertheless, okay, the bottom line was that he said that when he was in school that they taught him, look, don't bring in the Constitution. It's too controversial. There's plenty of codes out there that you can use to lift it up. There's plenty of court cases. You can use these things to lift it up. Don't make it anything where it gets controversial, okay? So don't bring it up. And that's why lawyers, these BAR lawyers, hardly ever bring up the Constitution. You know, you read our papers, it's nothing but Constitution. It's nothing but the Supreme Court rulings that are, obedient and lifts up the Constitution. Those are the things we bring up, our founding documents, you know. But they will never bring that up. They will never bring the Magna Carta. They won't bring the Declaration of Independence. And they won't bring the Constitution and, of course, the Capstone Bill of Rights. And what's really, really amazing and blows my mind are these people who claim to be constitutional lawyers. I don't know how it is that these BAR teachers or professors or whatever they want to call themselves get out there and teach these people to become constitutional lawyers. And I listen to these constitutional lawyers and they don't know nothing. I mean, these guys are ignorant to anything that has anything to do with common law, anything to do with our Bill of Rights. They can't. They're unable to formulate two thoughts and come to a conclusion. Everything that they do is already conclusive for them. They've been taught that this is the conclusion, and it's written in stone, and don't move from it. And so you watch, and you wonder, how could they even be talking about the Constitution? I don't even know what they're talking about. You know, there's a guy on a radio station down in New York City. I can't think of his name, but he claims to be a constitutional lawyer. And I think he's an absolute moron. I've never heard anything coming out of his mouth that is anywhere near that bears any weight and supports the Constitution. So it's pretty disgusting with this Bar Association. They are subverters. They need to be, you know, I wanted early on to go after the Bar Association. But that's like going after the President of the United States. I realize that. And so we never really did. One day maybe we will, but one day we may not have to, because it's just going to, you know, just fall apart when the people take control of the courts finally, and there'll be no Bar Association anymore. And you'll have to go searching under the rocks for all these rats and cockroaches and things. But, you know, they're just subversive, and I give no credibility to any of their positions. They don't even know what to do or say. We write papers, they can't answer them. And the judge will help them by ruling some stupid thing. Early on, we used to get hit all the time. They'd throw us out of court for this or that or the other thing. I mean, stupid stuff. They don't do that anymore. They just don't know what to do, and they don't say anything. And that could be as bad as being thrown out of the court sometimes, too, you know, because you got to move things along.
Thanks. That was a very interesting answer.
Okay.
And don't forget, a bar card is not a license, but I don't want to open up that, but that's another thing. It's just a union card.
Yeah,
anyway.
It's a window washer card.
Yeah, right. Anyway, I think we beat the bar up bad enough tonight. I hope if we got lawyers that are listening that they still like us. Anyway, next speaker, it looks like Charlie.
Hey, John. My name is Charles Breitweiser from Middlesex County, New Jersey. One of our administrators got arrested, and I did a habeas corpus for him on July 22nd. So how do I know what else is going on?
What's the name of the person?
Ajib Thomas.
Ajib Thomas. I'd have to look to see if we did. That doesn't ring a bell.
He's an administrator for what? For with us or who?
No, he was. I think I got an email on this.
Middlesex County.
He's taking the position as administrator within the county for the common law grand jury within that county. Of course, he's in the process of learning. We don't have any active administrators per se, but they're taking the positions, getting ready, so we're moving to the courts, and they should be taking all the courses. And I do recall an email on someone in Jersey that is an administrator, one of our administrators, and I think I even saw that there was a habeas corpus out, but I don't recall seeing it on paper. I'll tell you what, are you his next friend in this?
I'm another jury administrator.
Okay.
I'm one of the four.
Is he in jail?
Yes.
And now, does he have a next friend working with him? Are you his next friend to write the paperwork?
Yes,
if he's
I
in
am.
Jail, he needs someone. Okay. Why don't you give me a call tomorrow, let's say about 10, 11 o'clock. I'll give you a phone number here, 845. You got a pen and paper?
Yes, I'm ready.
845-223-6560.
6560. And
now,
what
call
time
me about 10, 11 o'clock. I'll look through the records to see if we have anything on him. Maybe there's some paperwork sitting in, in intake. And we'll see where we're going. You know, I haven't done much on, and there's a lot of people that are trying to get some things done, but I haven't got anything done in the last 2 weeks, at least, maybe 3 weeks, because I've been so tied up with so many other things. In the past couple of weeks, we've been just doing a lot of things, setting up the store, trying to get other court cases written, papers written, and then dealing with just a whole bunch of things. So we haven't been too active. But give me a call. Let's look it up and see what we got on them.
Okay, you got it, John. Thanks a lot.
Okay, thank you. Bye-bye. Good, Rod.
Okay, thank you, Charlie.
Thank you.
Hello? Hello?
What'd you do?
Hello? I don't know. It says he's unmuted.
You know, one of the things I noticed on this board that I didn't notice before, well, he's not there. I don't see him at all. I don't see anyone there. You know, if you click the next question right next to the checkbox, you see that question mark? Click the next question because there's nobody in there. Nobody open right now.
Okay. Yeah, that's what I did. I hit next question, and I thought I heard somebody.
Okay, hello. Now you see how that little... Hang on a second, hello. Fred. Is
yeah.
that Fred from California?
Yes.
Hang on one second.
Yeah.
Hang on a second. You see that little guy that showed up under the Q&A with the little box?
Yeah. That's
okay.
what's supposed to
Now, sometimes that mute box doesn't uncheck, but as long as that guy's got that bubble on his head, they can talk.
Yeah, the mute box is not unchecked on him. I did know that. But
sometimes it unchecks and sometimes it didn't. On my computer right now, it shows unchecked. Your computer shows
it's
checked?
It's just unchecked, as you were saying.
Yeah, that's kind of delay on that. I was always confused.
Yeah, okay.
There's a delay on that check, so ignore that and look for the bubble. Go ahead, Fred.
Okay. Very good.
I wanted to bring up a point. Brent was talking about the common law courts are open, so there's no martial law. My question is, where are the common law courts?
The common law court is found in every federal district court, very particularly, and you should find them in every state court, too. Now, there may be usurpers sitting at the front of that courtroom with a black cape and a hammer in his hand, and you got to watch out, he doesn't hit you in the head or something, you know? But you may see one of those guys up there, and he may not do the right thing, but that's a common law court. That's our court. And these guys take you into jurisdictions unknown, and you got to make your point, okay, that, you know, what kind of court you're opening. You got to signal the judge on a few little things. You got to let him know that, hey, you know, you got to object when he takes you into a jurisdiction. When he does something that he shouldn't be doing in that courtroom, then your only conclusion is that he has taken you into another jurisdiction. That's what I conclude. Whenever he does any, if he opens his mouth, he's taken me into another jurisdiction. That's my opinion anyway. But, you know, if once he does something he shouldn't be doing, he's taken you into another jurisdiction, you can object. You could write your writ of errors. You can have him pulled off the bench by having him forcing him to recuse himself. And at some point in time, you're going to want to make a federal case out of it for violation of your unalienable right of due process and, you know, your right of having a court of jurisdiction for taking you out into a foreign jurisdiction. So,
well, I have even a better question. Listen to this. In the common law court, you write up everything that's going to be presented in your case. So when you do that, when you walk into court, you should demand the jury be present right now. Because this is my case. Present your side and get it over with. Where's the jury? Why do you have to go through these buffoons in black capes?
Well, look, you're absolutely right. Every time they call you in for these stupid conferences, generally speaking, they're just trying to set the case up so that they can throw you out of court. That's been our experience. Now, if you're in a case, of course, like you have going on out there in California, okay, which, of course, they're operating it as a, you know, it's a puppet jury that took up the whole thing. It's a kangaroo court. It's, I don't know what clue of jurisdiction the court is in, but it certainly isn't in a common law. But nevertheless, okay, they have to make certain decisions, and they have to go through certain things, and the judge does have a certain amount of authority to some degree, but he can only go so far with it. A judge can't really just keep throwing out your witnesses to begin with, okay? They do it all the time, but they can't really do that. But, you know, when you have these court hearings, they're calling them hearings, and they're having them all the time, usually they're not necessary. It's telling you you're really not in the right court and that there's a problem there. But you got to use your common sense. Sometimes you have to come together and have a conference, and it makes sense that you have to have a conference to make some decisions and get a dialogue. But I think a lot of this should be able to be decided between, you know, myself, let's say, on the one side of things, and a lawyer on the other side, or two lawyers. They should be able to work a lot of things out and then bring it before the judge and move forward as civilized people who have, honor for each other, but they don't do it. They just, you know, I see it over and over again. You'll see these courts going on for a year, especially the criminal courts. And by the time you get to the end of this thing, the people who are being charged with some kind of a crime, you discover that they haven't got one witness left because the judge has kicked them all out, every single one of them, over the course of a year. He gets rid of this witness, get rid of that one. You can't use that piece of evidence. You're not going to use that evidence. You can't say this. You can't do that. You're going to – out here, they're telling them that they can't – out in Oregon with the Bundy case, okay –
They're telling them that they can't put in an affidavit. Are you serious? A judge telling the people they can't put their affidavits into the courtroom? Is that insane or what? And the judge silencing the people, unable to say anything, throwing out the judge telling them that when they get up to make their case, they can't talk about what they were up there for in that wildlife preserve. They can't talk about why they were there. Okay? They can't talk about the man that they assassinated, Lavoie Finnegan. They can't talk about this. These are the things going on in this courtroom right now as we're speaking. Now they've already gone through the jury, and I think they're into the trial. I haven't got a hearing on what's going on out there. But we're ready to throw a few more wrenches out there.
There is one thing that I would like to bring your attention to. Have you heard about the Jesse Ventura case?
Well, I haven't heard about it. I heard of Jesse Ventura, of course, but no, what's up with that? Have you heard about that, Gerard?
No.
No, I haven't either.
Well, it's a very powerful case if you want to really think about it, because Jesse Ventura was misrepresented in a movie, and he sued the movie manufacturers, the corporations that produced the movies, because they were profiting from a lie. And it really got slanted, because they had all, you know, the media is controlled by six corporations. They were all present in the courtroom with lawyers. I mean, this guy had a battery of lawyers against him and his lawyer. And it cost him over $1 million. And he actually won his case.
I did hear that case, yes.
And the thing boiled down to, oh, he's suing this poor widow. And no, he was suing the insurance company, and the judge wouldn't allow that to even be mentioned in court, because the jury would decide against the insurance companies and rake them over the coals. And another thing they did is they said simply that the judge said that the attorneys, the defense attorneys, should have filed this. So they turned around and filed it for him, practicing law from the bench.
Well, they want to do. They do whatever. Look at, but you see, you got to know how to deal with them. Lawyers won't deal with them. A bar lawyer won't go up against the judge. The bar lawyer is taken in the back room, and he's schooled on how this case is going to go. And if he starts to violate it, that case, and start to move in directions, you know, the judge can give him a look or make some kind of a face or something, and or say, hey, let's get in the back room. We got to talk. And then they settle them down. You can't go there. We're not going there. You stay away from that. And they control the cases exactly like that. Look, you're going into a courtroom, especially if it's a criminal case. You know, you're going into a courtroom. The judge works for the government. Okay, if you got an attorney that's given to you by the court, the attorney works for the government. You got a grand jury that's chosen and controlled by the government. You got a trial jury that's controlled and controlled by the government. You got a prosecutor that's all government. Everything in that courtroom is government, and they're all going to work together to get what the government wants, and that's their game.
Now Jesse has to go through an appeal process. I think this would be a really good case.
No, he should sue the court. No, he can go. He doesn't have to go through. Was there was a jury involved?
Yes.
He could.
That's why I'm thinking. That's why I'm thinking NLA or Brent Witters would be the perfect people to get in there and just put the.
Well, if someone sends him to us, we'll talk to him about his case.
Yeah, I
know. Who knows? He could be a good donor maybe for us.
But I thought he won the case. Didn't he win the case?
He won it, yes. He won the case, but then the judges threw it out.
He won it, but the judges threw it out. They're violating. They can't go against what the jury says, the judge.
But they did. That's what I'm trying to say.
They do that all the time.
This is an excellent case for a grand jury to investigate.
Well, that judge needs to be arrested outside of the court, maybe, but arrested. Look, he's committing treason, you know what I mean? This is bad stuff.
Well, the reason you're doing...
I won the case, but I'm going to throw it out. Yeah.
The reason they're actually doing this, I believe, is because the media lies. And if
just
they're
think about it, how they got away with that. A jury made a decision and the judge threw it out. Is that what you're telling me?
Yes, sir.
How dumb we the people are. That tells us how dumb we the people are.
I'm a spectator.
Nullification is the answer to this thing. No bar lawyer is going to win this case. No bar lawyer. There's no bar lawyer that he can hire to go in and win this case. It'll never happen. Only someone going in there that's not connected to the bar, that is not controlled by the bar, and only those kind of people are going to get in
there.
Well, you go in, we talk about the Constitution, period.
First thing he should have done was give the judge a writ of error. Did he give the judge a writ of error?
There's something more.
Yeah, he can't overturn the judge's ruling.
There's something more.
Hold on. That's perfect. Well, you could do that with one paper. He's absolutely right. That judge was way out of line. He didn't have the power or the authority. By what authority, what power do you think you had to do that? Give him a writ of error, explain why, and he if you put it right in a piece of paper, he won't be able to argue it.
And look at the problem is he didn't open up a court of record. That's where the judge rests. In other words, when you go in there and you open a court of record, you let them know that you're under the Constitution, you're not under some phony baloney, some kind of contract, adhesion contract and stuff, and you rebut the presumptions. So then you have a solid ground to stand on to give the judge a writ of error. But if you're going in there under a certain jurisdiction that you got yourself into because you didn't object. And by the way, the way the courts are open is you have a play. If you can object, the court is open. Whether you're doing the right thing or the wrong thing, they're open. Martial law is when there's no court to object in. But anyway, I just wanted to throw that out there from way earlier.
Good, I got that. But I wanted to make one statement that I can't squeak in here. This is such a powerful case because what it does is it attacks the media. Now, the Supreme Court's held that the media is entertainment. Okay, fine, they're entertainment. But as long as they purport to be the news, and if they lie on the news, they're culpable. They can be sued for damages. That's what this case is about, and that's why they're trying to sweep it under the rug. Now, a guy like Donald Trump could get in there and mop up all six corporations for what they've said about him. That's one example.
So the court gave the media an out by saying they're entertainment? Maybe the court's entertainment, too. I don't know. Where did you stop with that baloney? They're entertainment. Look at, they get press passes. They get special rights to report. They're not entertainment.
8 minutes over.
It's the First Amendment. They guarantee freedom of the press, not the media. That's why they called it entertainment.
We're way over, so we're going to have to end this. We can pick back up on this Monday if you want. And, we got a lot of other people still in the queue, but we're going to have to move on. It's 3 minutes after midnight. So, like I say, is Lord bless everyone. We'll see you next Monday. And don't forget Thursday, if you can make it to that meeting, we're organizing around the nation. So let's get it done. Have a good evening.
Thanks for squaring away the credit card thing. I'm going to donate.
Okay, thank you. Appreciate that. Okay, we need the money.
The actors and jesters are here. The stage is in darkness and clear. We're raising the curtain, and no one's quite certain whose play it is. Listen then, if we'd known just how right we were going to be. For we dreamed a lot, and we schemed a lot, and we tried to sing of love before the stage fell apart. Yeah. let the curtain fall.
Nothing else.